people want to see anything like normal defiled. It's like more pleasurable to them.
Hello, and welcome to the Negative World Podcast, a podcast about video games by the Nintendo fans at negativeworld.org. This is episode 26, and we're recording on Friday, January 27th, 2012. I'm your host, Steven, or as I'm known on the boards, Dr. Finkelstein. And with me today I have...
Mr. Mustache, and in some circles I'm known as Superstar Rob Schultz. It's true.
What's your topic, Mr. Superstar Rob Schultz?
Oh, I'm going to be talking about community aspects on Negative World right now, and what you can come down and see, I guess. Excellent. It'll be a good time.
All right, my name is Anand, and I go by Anand, but sometimes I'm known as Anand. And my topic will be, what's my topic again? Oh yeah, storytelling. Storytelling in games, what you think are the best examples, whether you think it should even be attempted, and so on. And we also have...
Hey, I'm Lewis. On the boards, I'm known as Lewis Tutan, and my topic goes kind of hand-in-hand with what Anand's topic is with talking about RPGs, what makes them awesome, and what do you like?
And what I'll be discussing pretty soon is licensed games. You know, I just love the Bratz games. I just want to talk about Bratz and Z's. And, no, actually, I just want to talk about licensed games and kind of, you know, they once had a heyday and now they're just kind of shovelware, and I want to talk about why that might be. Also, THQ kind of had a little bit of interesting news recently. One last thing I want to mention before we get started is that apparently, if you look at a calendar, it's apparently the last episode before our one-year anniversary.
Aww.
And yeah, that's pretty cool, you know, that this thing has been kicking for a full year now. And so I just wanted to do a shout-out to our buddy Guillaume.
Hey, Guillaume.
And for, you know, being such
a diligent
worker and creative architect for this damn thing. So, you know, thank you, and thanks to everyone who's been on and who listens, and everyone but myself, because that would be
and thank
elitist.
You, Steven.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Front man, Steven.
All right, so let's get this party started, guys.
You guys, I'm not playing anything really relevant right now. I've just been playing a lot of GameCube lately. I like my GameCube; it's cool.
You played on your Wii or your GameCube?
On my GameCube. If you remember back to episode 4,
what color? First,
listen, I had a black one at launch, then it broke, and Mrs. Mustache bought me a silver one for Valentine's Day.
Nice.
Right around the time the Wii came out, so that's cool. I'm playing MVP Baseball 2005. Really heavy lately. It's fun. Yes, 2005.
That's timely.
Seven years old.
I think that's worth -$5 at GameStop right now.
You should pick it up then, because it is a great game. Now, I've been working really heavy on my, I don't know if you guys remember my NCAA 2005 project also. Yeah. That is coming to a close real soon. We've scheduled the kickoff for February 12th. So I've been hammering away on that lately.
Is there anything specific about the year 2005 that makes you so fun?
No, well, that was the last college game they made, EA did, because they just started making stuff for Xbox and...
Oh, really?
They PS3. They put out like two or three or two. On GameCube, I think.
Yeah, the college game and MVP Baseball both had 03 and 04 games, but 06 for some reason just wasn't there for either of them, and I about had a heart attack at GameStop. When they told me it wasn't coming, I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean? So that's okay. I'm still playing that one, in conjunction with Madden 2005. And for people unfamiliar, will you shut up?
What keeps you playing these games that are like versus the more updated
that
ones?
That are 7 years old, probably.
Yeah. You know how they say Canadians are like a decade behind Americans? That stereotype joke. It's like you being so close to Canada, you're like stuck in a weird time bubble and you're kind of stuck behind it, but not exactly.
Yeah, I'm pretty close to Canada, so that can be. But
Rob lives in the past, but not that far in the past. Yeah. Just 7 years.
I'm wearing Guitar Hero pants right now too.
Hey Rob, did it just come out? Isn't it awesome?
It's so what, Guitar Hero?
Yeah, it's
Guitar
so
Hero,
novel. Yeah.
It's okay.
Guitar Hero
guys,
1.
The economy is doing so well.
Yeah. And that George Bush.
Oh, you guys. Well, I'm playing Madden 12 on Wii, and I'd actually prefer to play the 05 game.
Okay.
Well, you know what they did with the player models? I don't know if you saw pictures at all. They changed everything. Yeah. It's not...
Like
it's more cartoony. It's not really realistic anymore. And they were like, hey, it's from the ground up, so it's going to be cool for Wii. Except it's kind of not.
Did it still have motion controls and stuff?
Yeah, I play that way.
Is it fun?
It's okay. I prefer to use the controller, GameCube controller. But they did implement classic controller support this time around, though I haven't played with that yet. I think it has to do something, like I think you throw with the stick with that, which is what I don't want to do. You know, like flick the stick up, the right stick up or something like that. I'd just rather press A or something. I don't know. Anyway, go ahead. You're going to say something?
I was just going to say, I haven't played a baseball game, not counting Wii Sports, since like Ken Griffey Jr. for the 64?
Super Nintendo or 64?
Yeah. 64, I think.
They had Winning Run was the first... The first Griffey game was Winning Run on Super Nintendo, and then
wasn't that the one on N64, Home Run Derby, or
they had three?
Are you serious?
Well, no, they had two on Super Nintendo, and they had Ken Griffey Jr. Presents Major League Baseball was on N64. I own that game, and there was also Slugfest.
Oh, yeah, Slugfest. They still have stuff like Baseball Stars on the Virtual Console, Baseball Stars 2 from the Neo Geo is pretty awesome. Have you guys tried it?
I have it on NES.
No. The second one's pretty different. It's pretty fun. You should try it. Oh, it's on SNK Collection 2.
Isn't Baseball Stars 2 on NES?
No, that's Baseball Stars 1.
Sure,
there was a second one on NES, but I think he's talking about the Neo Geo version.
I haven't played the Neo Geo version.
I think it's different. It's got like phony... the Baseball Stars NES is the one where you can create players. And the Neo Geo one is like... It's like a team of like Frankenstein monsters and stuff like that.
That's like my college game.
It is. Except
it doesn't name that. They don't look like that. But okay, let me explain for people totally foreign to the process of this. The college game, there's no license. I kind of explained this before too, but you guys might not know. There's no college license, so everybody does not have a name. So there's guys like his name is like wide receiver 8 or something like that.
Good name.
Which is no good. So I renamed everybody. What's that?
That's his family name. Yeah.
His family name is Receiver. His given name is Wide, and he's the 4th.
His parents were predicting his weight problem.
Yeah. Okay.
As his 7 ancestors had a weight problem.
Why'd I go first? I shouldn't have gone first.
You guys are
all over me. No one has any idea what I'm playing.
Quit talking about sports.
It's playing 2005 games. I got
nobody
that.
Else does. So anyway, so nobody has names, so I have to name everybody. And I gave a theme to each team, and those teams interact. Like, I made Ohio State, like G.I. Joe guys or something like that. And Michigan is Transformers, and they're in the same conference, and they play each other. So it's like G.I. Joe versus Transformers guys. So, and there's like 200 teams in the game. So you need 200 teams. Yeah, so it's taken a while. It's been 8 years, I guess.
Why you're still playing it?
It hasn't been 8 years straight to do it. Like, I know I took some time off, and I think I took years off at some point, but it's been 8 years. And I actually looked up like Michelangelo with the Sistine Chapel. It took him 4 years. So this is gonna be twice as long as his project to paint a roof.
Better be twice as good.
It's gonna be twice as good. And then
And then you won't be able to import them anywhere because they stopped making games in the series.
No, you import it into Madden 05, and then you have to add guys in. So yeah, that's what I'm playing on GameCube, I guess.
You should take a time machine back in time afterward and drop it off to your younger self. You'll blow his mind.
No, I would have been expecting it, because I'm like, I had this idea. Yeah, I'm playing some other stuff, but we can talk about that in the community game.
Okay.
Stuff, too, because those are community games that I'm playing.
Wonderful. Nice segue to the future. Anand, what have you been playing, man?
Well, just today, I downloaded some stuff on the 3DS. I downloaded the new Mario and Sonic the Olympics demo, which, have you guys downloaded that or even tried it?
I downloaded it. I haven't tried it yet, though.
It's this pretty awesome. She's already played it?
I buy her stuff. She never plays anything. But is that the Sonic or the summer one or the winter one?
This is like the new summer one, summer 2012 or something like that.
I bought her the summer one for Christmas. She didn't play yet, but we did play the winter one. It was all right.
Have you guys played it? Yeah, like those the older games were kind of. It's kind of amazing how exhausting they are. Like the Wii games, you know, and the DS games are kind of mini games and things like that. I think they're pretty decent. I don't think anyone at Negative World has played it besides maybe Rob, maybe me.
What do you mean exhausting?
Like physically exhausting. Like swimming is just like, you're like sweating at the end of it.
The speed skating was pretty rough.
Speed skating is pretty fun.
Oh, you like it?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I have a rough time with it.
I'm like amazing at it. Okay, so like the new 3DS game has a demo on the downloadable channel, which is free. And it's basically like mini games, but it makes really good use of the 3DS hardware. There's tilt games, and there's button games, there's stylus games, and it's a pretty good sense of 3D throughout the whole thing, and that was pretty fun. And I also downloaded Maximilian, or it's just called Mutant Muds now, Revenge of the Mutant Muds.
Mm-hmm.
Revenge of the Mutant Muds. Maybe it's just Mutant Muds, I don't know. But Mutant Muds is in there somewhere, and that's pretty fun. It's like, did you guys ever have a Virtual Boy?
No.
No, what kind of Nintendo?
I played it at KB Toys back in like 1995.
I bought it at KB Toys.
Did you?
In 1995.
There we go.
Maybe it's the same one. No, actually, I bought it after they had already like, you know, exiled what's his face, and you know the Virtual Boy was going out of stock, and they weren't making any new games for it. And
I remember the prices plummeted to like $30, and I didn't have a job at that time. My sister wouldn't buy it for me, my parents wouldn't buy it for me, so I never
$30
got
for the actual system?
For the whole system, and then the games were like $5 each.
The games
I know!
Jeez.
Because now you get broken ones for maybe $150, and it's like, I don't know about that.
So. Well, that's not good news, because my battery's leaked all over my battery pack, and I have to buy a new one. But I actually did buy it for $30 at that exact same time.
Nice.
And I got some games for $5, and it was kind of fun. It was kind of dizzying, and it kind of hurt your head after a while. But the games were actually decent, like the 12 games they had. So
yeah, I remember playing around with Wario Land, and that was actually really good. And that's what Mutant Muds reminds me of a little bit.
You just totally stole my segue.
I'm sorry, but hey, I'm just letting you roll with it, man.
Okay. Moving on. So so Wario Land is pretty much a platformer in which you have, I think it was two planes in that game, and you can jump back and forth. And Mutant Muds is very, very similar actually to it, and it has three planes, except for there's like secret worlds, which are red, like the Virtual Boy, and they have two planes, and so it's kind of like an homage to Wario Land, and it kind of feels like Wario Land in a lot of ways. And it's pretty fun, and it's surprisingly difficult. Like, when I saw the early videos, I thought it'd be too easy, but when I played it, I died like 5 times in the first secret stage.
I read a review that said it was kind of overly simplified, though. Which, I mean, platformers are kind of simple. Like, at the core, the concept's very simple, you know. But, I mean, so is it entertaining throughout so far?
Well, throughout the 1.5 stages I've played.
Absolutely, yeah.
So far, I think it'll be pretty fun. I mean, it's a platformer. It doesn't, you know, have the physics aren't quite as good as Mario, but it works pretty well. And you know, like Mario Sunshine has the water pack.
Mm-hmm.
So this started life as like a DS demo, and it was a 3D like Mario Sunshine ripoff, and now it's kind of like a 2D platformer with the water pack still. So instead of using the water pack to make platforming easier in 3D, in 2D they just use it to make really, really difficult jumps and stuff like that. So it seems pretty fun so far. And the one kind of weird quirk is that when you press the water pack, you can't just engage it and disengage it at will. As soon as you press it, it stays on for a certain amount of time. But I realize that's because I think they realized when they were developing it that it would be uncomfortable on the 3DS to hold one button and press the shoot button at the same time. So I think that's the workaround. It works pretty well.
Do you really think that's why they put the water pack in there?
I do, because it was annoying me to have to hold that button down. Then I realized I didn't have to, and I was like, oh my god, it's so much easier. What do you guys think about the 3DS controls?
They're all right.
Oh, really? I don't know. They're kind of like they're kind of hard on the hands after a while. I feel like. Even yeah. Mario Kart 7, like holding the gas.
Yeah, the analog slider feel. It's tough to hold on to that for a long time, but I don't have a problem with the buttons at all.
Oh, maybe it's just me then.
No, I mean, I think we're all a little different. I have this weird, like, pinky stand thing that where I hold, like, almost like a giant sandwich, like a hoagie, when I play Mario Kart 7. But I hold it differently when I play, like, I've been playing Radiant Historia, and I hold it differently then. And I don't know, it's not perfect. And I think the buttons, too, don't necessarily even, I mean, they don't feel like, I don't know. What am I saying?
I prefer the buttons on the DS, the DS Lite.
Yeah, right, exactly. Or the DSi or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and the control pad the same way. But, I mean, they're not bad, I don't think. They're just
different. They're definitely functional. But I find myself playing 2D games and, like, downloads and stuff with the analog slider because the D-pad sometimes just doesn't feel right when you use it.
And that's something you would never even imagine doing if you had, like, a good alternative, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Do you guys have a lot of unconventional grips for, like, a lot of different games?
No.
I think it depends on the game. Like, I definitely, especially with the N64 ones, I had a Mario Party grip because you had to. Like, and I think you know what I'm talking about. Like, I think
your hand just turned into a Mario Party
in the lap, in your palm.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I think I've still got an indention on my left palm from where it's, you know, rotating that stick real fast.
Yeah, I think everyone did that. It was painful.
Well, they handed out the gloves, you know.
I didn't know anything about that.
Or something like that. Did they have pictures of Mario or something, or were they just like latex gloves or something?
Yeah, they were just, well, they weren't latex, but they were just, I think they were kind of like the gloves that you, like a baseball player would wear when he's up to bat, that kind of
like
thing.
Like a batting glove.
Yeah. Which is just ridiculous. Mario Party, get out your gloves, guys.
Well, you know, like back in the old days when they used to have those games that were all about, just pressing buttons fast, like decathlon type games and stuff like that. Like, everyone has their own secret technique for doing that kind of stuff, right? No. Just pressing a button really fast.
Absolutely. You have to have, like, some way to twitch your hand like you're going through a seizure to just do that. My cousin, he and I were pretty competitive growing up with video games, and I would kick his ass in most cases, except for when it came to those damn games. So he loved popping in Mario Party, because he would smoke me all the time, because he could just tap that button, like, no tomorrow, and I would just, I don't know, fatigue or not even do it right, or I don't know.
So that's what I've been playing, essentially. And I played the Vita for a little while. I played the Vita with Side Director Zero, Andrew. And we met at that Vita social club, and I played that for a bit. And that thing is pretty nice. It kind of makes the 3DS graphics look like shit, kind of. But most of the games are kind of uninspiring also, just kind of what you'd expect. Wipeout wasn't that great. And Little Big Planet was all mini games what they were showing, but there was one game called Sound Shape, which is by the everyday shooter guy, like Jonathan Mack, and that was awesome. It's like a platformer that's based on sound, so you can jump on boxes, and then it's sort of you're sort of sequencing a little song in each part of the level as you're going through, and that was pretty awesome. Like, I don't know if I'd buy a system for it, but I would totally buy it if I had that.
How really quick? How is the back touch screen tickle thing? Yeah.
I don't think I used it for anything because I didn't play that Little Deviants or Uncharted. Mostly we were just talking about stuff, but so I just played those three or four games and I didn't use it that much, but the overall interface is okay. It seems pretty nice. And the screen is like, it's huge. First of all, this thing, it's like pretty large and the screen is really, 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 really nice. But, as far as games, only Sound Shapes really I found interesting. The other ones were kind of just more of the same kind of franchise that Sony's been pushing out lately.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, but overall, the hardware seemed pretty nice. So
that's cool. Well, it'll be interesting because, yeah, like you say, that the graphics are nice and, you know, you enjoy that and you enjoyed, I mean, just the general controls and everything, but the games are not what's there. I was listening to another podcast while shoveling snow the other day, and they talked about that for a long time, and that while the 3DS had a slow start and a slow build, it's got a ton of great games right now. And
yeah, it definitely has momentum. And the other thing is that... you know, even though the 3DS came out at $250 and people thought the Vita was a bargain at the time, now the 3DS is cheaper. They're like, $250? I'm not paying for that for a handheld system.
Right.
And yeah, the 3DS definitely, I think, has the games that people want. I mean, just in general, in this country at least.
Yeah.
The PSP did not have games that the mainstream public really wanted. You know, not the portable kind of games. It was just kind of watered down versions of Sony's franchises.
And maybe I'm a little ignorant because I don't really follow, you know, the Sony... realm very much, but when I bought a 3DS at launch, even though the games weren't really there for me, I knew that they were coming. You know, it was clear to me that Mario was coming, Zelda would be coming, and all these great games. And like, as a Nintendo fan, you there's expectations you can guarantee on for the life
Mario Kart, yeah. Like Mario platformer
for the life of the system. So you can make a purchase like that and know that you'll be taken care of later. But you know, a lot of people bought PSPs. Oh, I can watch movies on this, and that, you know, and we know what happened. So
I mean, buying any system at launch is kind of it's an act of faith, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because the launch lineup usually does not deserve it, and we probably buy Nintendo systems at launch. And you know, I bought the 3DS at launch too, and even though they dropped it in price or whatever, I don't really regret it because you know we got to play it a couple months early and
right.
So imagine you imported it or something. And now it's really coming into its own, and I think it'll keep getting stronger. That was my worry with the 3DS, was that it would have a bad start. Third parties wouldn't support it throughout the lifespan, like the Wii, kind of. Even though it had a really strong start, third parties weren't on board. And I think third parties are really signing up for the 3DS now. Iwata said in the recent thing that I think there's 200 games in development for it, and I imagine that most of those are Japanese games, which is most of the kind of games that I want to play. So
hopefully get Xenoblade 3DS. Count on it.
And then they'll never come over here, like,
or it will a year later.
Well, Monolith, what's the DS game they made that didn't come over here? What's one of the many ones?
Somabringer,
and yeah. There's another one too. There's like these other Super Robot Wars games that they made that didn't come over here. So, I don't know, and Xenosaga, like a Xenosaga compilation, I think.
Yeah.
Actually, don't you guys feel bad for Monolith Soft? Like, they got bought for Nintendo, like, yeah, they got bought for Nintendo. And now fewer of their games come out in this country than ever before.
That's weird.
It is pretty weird.
How did Monado become Xenosaga?
Monado was always based on kind of... It's not based on it, but it's the same dudes that made it. And so
wasn't it like a totally different game, a totally different storyline or something?
No, same game. I think it's got the name change.
That's weird though. It's kind of like if you have like an adventure game with dinosaurs and you just slap some fox on there and call it Star Fox Adventures.
Yeah, who would think of doing that?
People think that's why Star Fox Adventures is shitty, but I'm sure Dinosaur Planet would have been equally shitty, and it would have
Dinosaur Planet would have been so good.
On N64.
Do you guys remember the shopkeeper in who's the most annoying voice ever in Star Fox Adventures? He's like, can I help you?
You pay this much.
You pay this much, scarabs. God, I'm going to claw my ears out. It was horrible. There was that huge rock guy who also had, like, everyone had, like, a Scottish or British accent in rare tradition. There was a huge rock guy who also had a horrible voice. I can't remember what it was.
I could only think of the guy from Austin Powers whenever he started talking.
Are you ready to warp?
Oh, yeah, Fat Bastard.
Well, there's really no segue from this, but we should probably move on.
We're going from the adventures to I'm still playing through Skyward Sword right now, so that kind of segues.
That's an adventure game.
It is an adventure game.
And probably better than Star Fox Adventures. There you go.
Probably is.
Yeah, but I just I actually right before Steven called me, I just finished the fifth temple, and I'm really digging it. I like that there's some new puzzles coming into the blood. And even though, like, have all y'all played it?
No, not at all.
Yeah, sorry. Rob.
Should I take my headset off? I was trying to finish, my college stuff.
Well, no, but I know there's a lot of people.
Rob needs to go listen. Finish it right now. Go play the whole thing, then come back to the podcast.
His backlog extends 8 years back because of that game.
No, it's not coming out in his part of the world until like 2018 anyway. So
yeah.
In his dimension, his alternate. Yeah.
I will say, you know, without giving away too much, like, and y'all that have played it, you know, like, the dungeons look small from the map. I think Zero and I were actually talking about this, but they're huge. Like I think the fourth dungeon, I thought, I'll be able to finish this in an hour, and it took me like three. I was like, wow. Yeah, so it's the game is massive. Motion controls are pretty spot on, despite what Jensid or Simba might tell you.
I like the motion control a lot too. I want them to keep it for the series. I mean,
yeah, I mean things like the beetle, that was a great item, and you know, the swords. I thought the sword play was really great, if not a little delayed, but it wasn't terrible. You know, so I went into it thinking, I'm not going to buy this Zelda at launch, and I ended up doing it, and I'm really liking it right now. So
you jumped on the hype train. You sound like Greg Miller from IGN.
Pretty much. I mean, I got the special edition and everything. I heard my gold wing run.
Yeah, it's really nice.
I actually resisted buying that somehow. I don't know how, but I was prudent for once in my
life. I got suckered into it. I don't know.
No, I initially was not going to, and then I called up my GameStop and was just like, yeah, make the change.
Click. Make it so...
Yeah.
Have you guys listened to that CD yet?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that CD is amazing.
It's good. The Wind Waker thing is awesome.
That's
Thank
fantastic.
You, yes. No, I was listening to that yesterday at work, and like... I mean, it didn't really make me want to cry, but I would have been okay if it did. Like, it's that good.
Incredible.
You know, like, it really plays into your nostalgia thing, right? It's like, yeah. When you hear those themes and stuff like that, it does kind of stir something inside of you.
And especially the whole just Zelda medley, that one track. That's awesome.
Yeah, all the medleys are awesome. Yeah. And like, you know, I have some quibbles with Wind Waker, but the music is really good.
Oh, yeah. It's probably my favorite Zelda music, to be honest with you.
Probably. I love that first theme in the beginning when it's just showing that scroll. I used to just watch that like on repeat over and over again.
So anyway, Zelda music is awesome. What else have you been playing, Lucas?
That, and I've been going through. I mean, I got Mutant Muds last night. We already talked about that, so we'll move on.
What do you think about
and I've
it?
Also been like, so far so good. I did the first 7 levels just because I had nothing but time at midnight, and I'd been playing the Endless Setlist on Rock Band 3, and I was like, I can't look at this anymore.
So 4 hours, isn't it?
Did you play it for like 10 hours?
No. I put it on pause overnight. There's like I couldn't finish. I was like, man, I've been doing this for 5 hours.
Were you playing all the instruments since nobody was around?
No.
Like a one-man band.
I started
one-man
on drums. Band. Well, I started on drums, and then my neighbor downstairs started hitting the ceiling, and I was like, fine, whatever. And this is at like 5:30. I'm like, that's fair. So then I started singing until I got the trophy for 25 songs or whatever. So I was like, okay, well, I'll just finish out on guitar, not thinking Freebird would be the last song. And that about owned me, but I like Meat and Mud so far. It's definitely got a challenge to it. I'm just worried it's a little too samey everywhere. Like, you know what I mean? There's not much success. Okay, the platform disappeared. Oh, it reappeared. I'm kind of worried it's going to turn into that.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, I was kind of surprised by the file size when I downloaded it. It was real small, but that's. Neither here nor there.
That's good because the demos are like 1,000 blocks each or something.
Yeah, I think Resident Evil is like 1,200.
Yeah, Mario and Sonic at the Olympics is
like 900 something. Yeah. But so I've been doing that and Kirby Mass Attack, which I'm about finished with that. I'm about to the end of level 4, and I like it. I think Kirby's a good experimental title for Nintendo to mess around with, and this one's no different with the. Kind of similar to Canvas Curse in the sense that it's all stylus controlled, but it's very different. A lot of variety in all the levels. But the thing is, they don't really stick to any given variety, over the course of several levels. So it's kind of frustrating. It's like, oh, here's a new twist, and then, we're moving on. So, but I like it.
For a while, Donkey Kong was kind of Nintendo's just try shit out and, try different genres. But now it's reverted back to Kirby, which it used to be with, like, the pinball games and Tilt and Pool, which is awesome.
Yeah, which is fine. And I hope that comes out on the virtual console, if they ever
I hope Tilt and Tumble 2 comes out for Wii U. Do you remember it was canceled?
Oh, yeah, because that was...
Wii U.
Wasn't that supposed to be on N64? No, that was...
It was connectivity. That's why it was canceled. It was connectivity between the Game Boy Advance and the TV. So it's perfect for Wii U. But they won't. They probably won't revisit it because they want to.
Hey, you never know.
Oh, Ludus, while you were talking about what you're playing, I know you're a huge Rune Factory fan.
Yes.
Did you get around to Oceans?
I got it for PS3 for Christmas, but I have not cracked it open yet.
That's so annoying to me because everybody was talking about how awesome this game's going to be, and then just came out, and I've heard nothing about it since then. Like nobody.
You know why?
It.
It's the whole, like, this is the syndrome of Resident Evil 4 and Killer 7 and Beautiful Joe 2. It's like the first one was exclusive, so people cared. And the second one was on PS3 and Wii, so nobody gives a shit. It's like
it's frustrating.
I don't know. That's my pet theory. Oh, one last thing about the Vita is that the analog nubs are horrible. They're so much worse than the slide pad on the 3DS. They're hideous.
Are they equivalent to what's on the PSP now, or...
I guess they're supposed to be a little better because they're recessed in, but they were just really uncomfortable. Yeah. It was like a bad remote control for a remote control car.
Yeah. All right. Well.
All right. Anything else you got to say?
Nah, I'm good.
Okay. Then we'll move on to me. So I don't know if Nikki noticed, Rob, but like it took me a while to get her name on my 3DS because this son of a bitch has been playing Radiant Historia for 60 hours.
And I haven't put Nikki on mine yet.
I just close it. I don't get out of the menu. I played a little Find Me 2 recently. Or no, the first Find Me, because I never even got through it. And that's annoying, because I don't street pass anybody, so I've got a bunch of boneheaded idiots fighting these ghosts, and they don't do anything, and it's so painstakingly slow. But I still have fun with it, so...
I think the day that they launched Find Me 2, I was still in the, because of the whole, like, I sent in my 3DS three different times for it to get fixed.
Oh,
but
really?
I was still on Find Me 1 the second time through. I was like, I'm going to spend every play coin I have and finish it. And I think I got the last boss down to like one hit point, and I'd spent all my money. I was like,
you were like running on a treadmill while you were playing.
Pretty much.
With 3DS in your hand.
Yeah,
like, the Find Me 2, I love how you can hire old people, because I just use level 7 Guillaume over and over again. It doesn't come cheap.
Yeah, I've got a couple people I street pass a lot, and I'll just hire them if I don't see them.
I think I just need to mail my 3DS to every one of you guys.
come to the meetup, dude.
That'll be tricky. I'm trying to move to Chicago this year, and I want to, though, but that, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
The meetup was awesome.
I heard it was, and I was ridiculed.
Wish I could have made it.
Verbally,
we ridiculed everybody,
so
it's okay.
That doesn't make me feel better. So Find Me 1, I guess, I've been playing a little bit. Fluidity, I got that with the download code, and I played through all that. And, we've talked about it before on the podcast. I just want to say that it is a lot of fun. It should be a must-buy for anyone, really. The end, I didn't really care for, like, the very last stage, the last boss area. It gets really ridiculously annoying. There's just a checkpoint issue, and there's a little bit of instant kill going on, so I kept dying and then having to go back way too far in the level, so that frustrated me. But it was an incredible game. I'm not going to write a review for it, but I would give it, like, a 9.8 or a 10 even. I mean, it's quality stuff, so definitely go play that. But yeah, back on Radiant Historia, I bought that on launch because it just looked really cool and I was really intrigued by the whole concept. Did not start playing it till about 3 weeks ago, which is pathetic and sad. But I think the graphics threw me off. I remember opening it up and I got through like the first 10 minutes and I was in Alistel, which is the main city you start off in. And I just didn't really know how I was navigating, where the hell I was supposed to go. And yada, yada, yada. But then I just sat down recently. I put it on my desk, so it was staring at me for like 2 months, telling me to play it. So eventually I played it, and I realized it is an incredible game. One of the greatest DS games in general, but also, a great game to finish out the DS's life. Because that came out right before the 3DS drop. So if anyone can get a copy of it, you really should. It's got great music. It's got great gameplay.
It's hard to find, right?
Yeah, apparently so. They didn't make very many. They might have had a second run, a second print, but after that, I don't think they did. And it was pretty small initially anyway. But, I mean, for anyone who doesn't know, it's an RPG, and it's a lengthy one. And pretty much the gimmick is that you play in parallel timelines, and you do things, and then you jump back to the other one, and you can go back in the same timeline. It's like Back to the Future as an RPG, in a sense. The battle itself is done on a 9x9 grid for your enemies, and so you can, like, do moves that knock them back or move them to the left, so you can do combos. And if you got three turns, you can either attack three times and you might not kill one character, but if you set up a trap and then you push this guy into the other guy and then push them both over, you can kill them faster. And so there's a lot of strategy.
That sounds cool, actually. Can you knock them off the board?
No. They are limited in that 9x9, but no, it's really cool. It adds a lot of strategy. Not all your characters, you have three in your entire party, but you can have up to like, I think 7 you end up having that you can swap in and out whenever you want. Of course, Stock, the lead character, he's always there, but you can swap out the other two. And so some of them have spells, some of them have higher attack.
Are there random encounters?
No, thank God.
Hooray.
You can see every single character, and you can even, you have a little sword, so there's a little bit of action in the overworld where you can swipe your sword at a guy, and it'll knock him back and knock him back. And eventually, after a few times, he'll fall asleep because you, like, knock him out. Then if you hit him, then you'll get the jump, and you'll get, like, 4 turns right away. So you can surprise attack them. Of course, if your back's turned and a character gets you, then they get a few extra attacks on you. So it's pretty cool like that. And right now, I'm really near the end of the game. And my guys are all pretty high in level. I think some of them are, they're not maxed out, but there's a certain level in which you stop learning magical spells and stuff. And I'm past that for most of my characters, so I'm not so concerned about leveling up my characters because I got a lot of strong weapons and stuff. So there's this one technique that you learn later where you can just be invisible. So you can even run past enemies and just not mess with them, you know. And when you leave a screen and come back, the enemies will respawn. So that's helpful when you've gone through an area. Maybe you're grinding, which you don't have to do in this game. I felt pretty leveled up all the time. But there was a few times when, I find the battles fun. So I realized that, Rainy, whatever her name is, it's like she's like 400 XP away from the next level. So, okay, I'll just play a few random battles over and over just to get my character up a bit, see if I'll learn a new spell, but it's not required at all. And my guys are at like level 60 right now, so that's a lot of progression throughout the game that isn't bogged down by grinding.
Who made that
game? A lot of people said it was the best. Atlas, I think.
Yeah, Atlas.
A lot of people said it was the best RPG last year.
Oh, absolutely. I would agree with it. I don't play RPGs that much, but definitely.
That and Xenoblade are supposed to be pretty much some of the best RPGs of the whole generation, Japanese RPGs, rather.
Now, one thing I do want to say about this while I still got a minute or two here is I feel like this kind of game, and maybe this will make me sound like a cheap ass, but it's kind of a game that you want to play with a guide because there's a ton of side quests. There's, like, on your little timeline map, there's like 236 nodes, and maybe 150 of them are actually main game stuff that you're going to get no matter what. The rest is all, like, dead ends or side quests where your characters learn new stuff, and you're going to miss tons of stuff because a character might ask you to go back in time and do this.
Is it fun playing through games with a guide, though? I mean, some people even use them for adventure games.
I used to do that exclusively way back when. Like, Final Fantasy III, I played through, like, with a guide really heavy when I was in high school.
Was it actually fun like that?
Yeah, I mean, it was still fun. I don't do it anymore, but now I'm getting to the point where Fink was talking about. I'm super paranoid I'm going to miss something. It's like, oh, I can figure out everything on my own, but I'll talk about stuff about Okami later, but I had done something and I went back to an old save and I found something I should have done. So I just picked up my old save. Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah. I played like another like 5 hours on that old save.
What is wrong with you?
Oh, so much.
But like certain games kind of demand that if you want to get the most out of it, you kind of have to know ahead of time some of that stuff. Like Skyward Sword, I played straight up. I didn't buy that guide, even though it was a nice book and everything, but I don't need to do that. But this game, you know, I definitely hit up GameFAQs quite a bit because there's certain places you can only find certain things, and they're not necessarily required, but it's really nice to have them. And like any of the strategy involved with like, oh, here's how you beat a guy, I didn't need that. I would just play myself, but to make sure that I didn't miss a node. And you actually, when you die in this game, I don't think I've actually ever lost a battle in that sense. Right. I always was able to heal myself and that sort of thing. Yeah, I don't think I've ever actually lost a battle, but you come to a lot of different decision points, and some of them will progress the plot, and some of them will lead you to a dead end, and then you won't lose, or there won't be a game over, but the time beings will be like, oh, well, that was a bad decision, maybe you shouldn't make that next time, douchebag, and then they'll send you back off to your little time node to start over.
Time beings are saucy.
The dead ends are actually nodes, and if you want a full 100% game, you have to even unlock those.
Do all of you guys 100% games, generally?
No, but this is the kind of game that I think maybe it's because on that stupid little map screen it says, you know, 100 out of 236. It tells me how many freaking nodes there are, so I'm just tempted to fill that, you know?
Don't you feel like it's just like a bad habit that you should just break, just totally ignore it, though? Don't you feel like you'd have more fun if you did?
But if he gets to the end and he's got 234 of those things and you missed two...
If it gets to the end and he just has 200? Then it's like freeing, right? It's like you're free.
Well, no, not necessarily.
This coming from the guy who never finishes games.
I never even start games, dude. I'm like, he keeps saying stuff about, yeah, I'm almost at the end of this. I'm like, does that happen? Do people finish games? Like, isn't this like the NES era where we just played like two levels and then put them away forever?
I don't know. Right now I'm keeping a list of all the games that I've beaten in 2012 because I'm just curious on how many I actually accomplished this year. And I don't know. I guess I could. Most games I just beat to completion of the plot and everything, but some games I do get caught up in wanting to complete, at least close to 100%, and this is just the kind of game. I just want to see every possible facet to these characters, what can happen to these guys. but I'm like running out of time for us, so I'll finish this up really quick. But
well, you said this podcast is gonna be 3 hours.
No, you keep okay. If you repeat something to yourself, Rob, that doesn't make it true. although it probably will end up 3 hours, and
yes.
The listeners at home, they will not hear a 3-hour podcast because I will do some editing. But yeah, so I don't know what the hell I was gonna say now.
You like it though. You like it.
Oh, I love this game. Yeah, I don't play RPGs very much, but this game blew me away.
We can talk more about RPGs later and see if we play them or not. But I think that's an interesting topic.
Yeah.
Like why? Yeah.
You do it. Fun. I'm looking forward to that one.
Well, then let's not wait any longer. Guys, so now it's the what do you think section of the podcast. Really quick, I want to throw a few rapid fire questions at you and get your 1 minute responses, which of course will probably be 100 minutes. But getting into this, we got a Poke Squadron on the boards recently had a poll series up about your favorite Mega Man game. So I wanted to see what is your favorite Mega Man game, guys?
Mega Man 2, no contest.
I'd have to agree with that probably.
Awesome.
That's tough because 2 was the first one I owned, but I think I actually like 3 a little bit better, but it's close.
Why do people like 3 better?
Because it's awesome.
Isn't that twice the amount of stages or something?
They're comparable in quality. I think that was just Mega Man at his best with those 2 games, I think.
Fair enough. Anand?
Mega Man is like the one franchise that for some reason I never ever played when I was younger, and I just never played any games in that franchise. And so I started playing through the Mega Man collection, but I'm still on Mega Man 1. So I'm going to have to go with... It is pretty hard. I'm going to have to go with Mega Man Battle Network... Mega Man Network Transmission on the GameCube, which everybody else hates, but I think it's pretty fun. And you get cards.
Added with the curveball. Got it. All right.
Cards. Yeah, it's by Arika, who's ex-Capcom, who also did Street Fighter X3, which I also like, even though everybody hates it. And I think it's pretty good, and you should seek it out. And everybody hates it, but it's good. Mega Man Battle Network Transmission.
All right, fair enough. Next question. So recently, a lot of new Animal Crossing 3DS details were released, and I know Rob's got his opinions on Animal Crossing, and I do too. So I just want to ask you guys, I don't know if you all are into it, but if you could make one change to the series, what would it be?
Bring back the Virtual Console games, like Game Boy Virtual Console.
And I'll even add an addendum to that. If I've got any Virtual Console games on my console, they should pop into my house.
Yes.
See, I think that would be more of what I want. I wouldn't want to have to, like... I wouldn't want an option to buy stuff through the game, or I guess if you found stuff in the game, why wouldn't they be on the... You know, like, it would be kind of weird to have them now only in the game itself. But what if... I mean, maybe they could make, you know, kind of pseudo-versions of
an arcade or games. Something?
Yeah. I don't know. I guess...
It would be cool, but, like, I think for the GameCube game, that was the best carrot you could ever have. To unlock like 20 old Nintendo games. I thought that was so awesome, and I was so sad when they took it out of the later ones. But I think the arcade idea is cool too, because they're not going to do the other one now.
I had Wario's Woods in that game, and that was the first time I had actually played that game.
Yeah, me too.
Before that,
it's fun,
and,
right?
Yeah. Like Nikki had never, or maybe she did have it on Super Nintendo. I'm not sure. Either she had played it first then, or she had it also. But like that was my first running with that, and it was pretty cool.
Wario's Woods is the one you have to get on the island, right? By burying something.
Yeah, I think you did.
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Forever, and I never got it. I just had the worst luck over like months of going to the island on my little Game Boy Advance or something. And then eventually, like years and years afterward, I looked up this cheat on how to get the items in Animal Crossing for GameCube. Someone made a code generator. Did you guys know about this?
No.
I know about the codes.
Oh, yeah. No, I do. Yeah, because you had to type in the codes initially to trade things, and you could just get stuff from anything. Yeah.
So you could download it. You put in the name of your town and your name. And somebody like backwards engineered what code it should be to get those every single game, except for, I think, Super Mario Brothers. You know, Super Mario Brothers and Legend of Zelda are in there, but they were never unlocked.
Right.
Yeah, that was on, wasn't that on Game Trailers did something on that not long ago?
I'm not sure.
A video about that on whatever their Mythbusters type thing was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was maybe 2 weeks ago. I just watched it. I was like, wow, that's kind of cool.
Should post it. Yeah, what?
What? No, you haven't said your thing though, of like, what you would change.
I'd like to go to the city with people, and I'd like to be able to go to their city and have their city be different, like their town is.
Okay. So unique cities. No, what I really want is just for the NPCs to just be more interesting and more to do more stuff with them.
Yeah.
You know, they actually took out I know it's kind of like a fetch quest, but to help them, like, oh, can you get this back for me from so and so? That was kind of entertaining for a while. They took that out later on. Yeah.
For 3DS?
No, they took it out for
it's a Wii.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Well, then they took it out for Wild World, and I guess I didn't come across it very much in City Folk, but...
What I kind of always wanted from the series was a little more just physicality, like maybe the ability to jump, or just like little bits, or maybe randomly generate a little something to get a little action in there, kind of.
The last question here is, in the Iwata keynote, he announced that the Wii was going to utilize near-field communications, and I don't know if you guys know what that is exactly.
I don't know.
I'm not entirely familiar.
It's kind of like... like an object, okay, say like you have a Bluetooth phone, but it only will activate when it's really near like a hub that it communicates with. So, I mean, that doesn't really sound like anything that new, but I guess the Wii U is going to use it for, they were saying like perhaps even figurines and stuff like that. So,
kind of like Spyro's Adventure.
Yeah, this is the new thing.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously it wouldn't be just figurines, but they want to use this technology in some capacity. So I don't know, does that make you want the system anymore? Does that kind of make you excited that maybe there could be cool applications? Or I'm not convinced yet.
I mean, it doesn't make me want the system anymore. I'd need to, I guess, get a feel for more what they're going to do with it. You know, because me is just kind of an average Joe who knows a little bit about technology. I don't even know what NFC is.
Yeah, I mean, they have to come up with something that gets us excited, because Nintendo shows a lot of peripherals like the heartbeat vitality sensor or whatever.
Yeah, what happened to that?
What did happen?
Maybe that'll be a near coming. Field.
It's still coming. It's coming with Xenoblade.
Yeah. Maybe there'll be a heart. Like
it'll be packed in only a GameStop with Xenoblade. No, but like the near field thing, maybe they'll use it for peripherals or something. I really have to see some sort of application, because it doesn't seem. Or maybe it's for peripherals. I guess just to hook up to it. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean,
I'm trying to think how you would even use it. And I can't think of anything. Like what?
That's why we're not developers.
You'd like put the tablet next to something?
Well, no, I think it was...
Oh, the console, right?
I think it's built in the console, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's built into the console, and then it's completely, like, accessories and other things like that.
Maybe that he was kind of grooming us for the possibility that the tablet won't be able to go as far as we hope it will?
Well, no, because in my little research that I did, near-field communications are literally within, like, millimeters sometimes. Like, they're not very far transmissions at all. So it's got to be something else, you know. But, you know what? Sure. That's another topic for another day.
All right, dude, so I'm going to talk about some community stuff today. I guess we've got... That's not funny. Community. Community.
Community.
Community.
James Lipton defines community.
What's great is that nobody listening to the podcast has heard the last 30 minutes that led up to that.
It really was like 40 minutes.
So Rob. Okay, yeah. Well, actually, for everyone listening, Rob painstakingly, I should say, it's probably not painless.
It's both.
He's really involved in getting everyone to get involved in various things around the site. although he pulls more weight than he should, because people, like, he never seems to get the backing that you deserve, sir.
No, it's like a 2% success rate.
But you do a lot of stuff, and I've given you props before, and
I know, so thank you very much.
You're here to talk about that, though.
He's a team player.
Oh, totally.
I've championed the community aspect, I guess. I do think it's very important to us playing. You know, even if you can't play with somebody, like, actually on the same screen at the same time, it's cool to go through a game at the same time. And we, with our games that we play there, have different ones applying to each side of those, actually playing with the people and playing you know, in your respective houses, not being able to interact directly, but playing at the same time. Like Monster Hunter right now, we restarted. Well, I didn't by choice. I had to start over when my Wii went down. Yeah, I lost 300 hours. What's that?
Yeah, all your data, right?
For everything. Yeah, it was horrible. It kept my online profile, but nothing attached to it, which is cool. So we had the Monster Hunter try thing going. I think we have like 145 pages or something.
More, I think it's like 200. Yeah.
Is it 200?
I think so.
I don't know. So we have that going, and myself, Anand, a non-mastermind, we had all played liberally before. You know, anyone who knows about Monster Hunter, we played past HR 50, each of us.
We each have probably like 300 hours, 300 plus hours, which is insane, because I don't play games for like more than half an hour usually.
Yeah, Mikey, a non-mastermind, said he only had like 200, though. I don't know how he did that. We had 300. So there are other people who still haven't played the game. Like, I found out that Guy had not played the game, and I guess Plute hasn't played either, and then X-Bob, I found out, also hasn't played. So the Wii's nearing the end cycle, like the end of its life cycle, and if you haven't started Monster Hunter now, and you don't start by February, you are never going to play this game. like, there's no way. There's no way. And part of the game is playing along with people. So we started over, and that's pretty much where our bread's buttered, I guess, with that.
You know, like, well, you actually play online more than any Nintendo gamer I've ever seen. So you only have Nintendo consoles, right? We should clarify.
Yes.
And you play online, like, all the time. Like, I always wondered, why didn't you just get, like, a 360 or a PS3?
No, I'm pretty sure that Iwata was like, oh, yeah, that Rob guy from Rochester, we need to have an online structure, because that guy, he loves it too much.
Yeah.
You're the sole reason. Yeah.
I know. But
Rob took it to Peter Moore in person for his failings on the Wii platform.
Supposedly.
His EA Sports failings.
Yeah, when we were in the EA thing. We had a question-answer session with Peter Moore, the president of EA.
We had 20 minutes, and Rob spent 15 of them grilling him about NASCAR and why NASCAR wasn't coming to the Wii. It was so funny. At first, it was just like, what is he doing? But then it was just funnier and funnier.
Well, I looked around, and nobody had their hands up. So I was like, okay.
Everyone was like, waiting for you to stop talking.
No? Okay, whatever. So yeah, so Monster Hunter's going on right now. If you haven't started on it yet, and you'd like to, and you're not... First of all, if you're not signed up for Negative World yet and you're listening to this, what are you waiting for? You know, get over there. Everyone's really cool.
Yeah, you just got to send me $10, you know, registration fee and, No, it's
I don't think
free.
It works that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's cool. We had, let me skip ahead. I think you were to mention it earlier or later on in the podcast, I think, but we just had Lunker 3 sign up, and he's actually got his own Mario Kart League going right now. Yeah. He joined Negative World because of the podcast.
Yeah.
And that could be you people out there.
Yeah, it's cyclical. He's, you know, he's paying it back to the place that you know, that he loves, I guess. I don't know.
And he's starting a Mario Kart Wii League, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which Rob also started. You had a Mario Kart Wii League. Right?
Yeah, we had a
incredibly successful, yeah.
We ran it in the fall. We're gonna have a spring one start up again soon. I like to run it with NASCAR. I know that doesn't make any sense to you guys, but I ran like our final 10 weeks was like hand in hand with NASCAR. So I'm going to wait till that starts. Probably like March, I think we can get going again on it. Another game that we had going, we had Okami Club. And we started this when? Like a year and a half ago?
It was before Okami didn't came out, like 10 or 11 weeks before the DS one came out.
Right. It was like right before it was going to come out. So I had never played it. You had never played it. A lot of other people had never played it. And it was one of those games where you heard so much about, like, oh, this game is so great. You got to play it. So we're like, hey, let's play it. So we had Octorokin be our dungeon master type thing. If you're unfamiliar with that, that is a Dungeons & Dragons deal where the guy like...
Nobody listening to this is unfamiliar with that term.
Oh, really? Okay. He was our dungeon master. So he broke up the game into 15 segments, you know, using walkthroughs or whatever. And he told us, you know, 3 bullet points, like basic things, what we'd have to do, like, you know, see what's going on in Shinshu Field and...
And we all kind of played through it together and shared our experiences.
So it kept you guys at the same pace?
Sort of. But after a couple of weeks, it was just like we were just kind of talking about how like how far we were and how we had to catch up and things like that. But Rob was finishing it, I guess.
Yeah, I'm back on it now. I restarted on the first, and I think that was so disappointing. I was so excited for a comic club when we started going because people were, you know, playing together pretty much. And I had a leaderboard. You know, going along with where everybody was and everything. It was neat. And I don't want to take, you know, super credit or anything, but after my Wii broke, like, that was it, basically. Like, I think you guys played, like, two more weeks, and, like, you were done.
I pretty much stopped at the same point you did. That game is incredibly long. And the thing about those clubs is, like, I like the idea of it, but I play through games so slowly, and I play games so rarely that, like, playing, like, a 60-hour game in a couple of weeks is, like, it's so much more than I usually play.
Like, I think Marsh came back, too, to play some more. Only Shadow Link beat it. Our Australian friend.
Yeah, Tim. And
that was, yeah, that was, they that's disappointing, too. I can't believe he's the only guy to finish it out of everybody.
Props to him. Props to Shadow Link.
He did a good
props
job.
Props to one of the two Shadow Links. Props to whichever one likes Zelda 2, because the other one hates it.
The way that Negative World itself is designed is really wonderful for just gaming culture, for us Nintendo fans, because especially with Nintendo not having their own unified kind of community area until more recently, it's been kind of hard for people to enjoy that. And as I think as we get older too, because you, all of us right here, I mean, I know Rob, you know, you're 30, right?
Yeah.
Anand, how old are you?
89.
So, okay, we're all, you know, pretty elderly at this point. And so as we get older and as we age, you know, friends, they move on, they, you know, move somewhere else and we kind of split apart. I can't just go over a buddy's house anymore, personally.
Oh, yeah, it's really hard to play multiplayer these days. Yeah. When you're in college, it's like all you do, right?
Sure. But yeah, and I mean, I haven't been in college since 2007. And so, and all of my best friends, literally all of them, have moved to, you know, a few states away. So the best way for me to do this now is online. And even though Nintendo hasn't had online systems in place, but like with Animal Crossing, I was still able to trade you know, items with people because of that code thing. And there's a community aspect to that. I've mentioned this site on the podcast before, but it's like Animal Crossing Community. And they're a whole site developed around this idea that everyone just comes together and pools the resources and talks about the game. And that really enhanced my experience with the whole series even. Because every time a new Animal Crossing game comes out, I go there. And it's just wonderful. And so I think that community is really important, even on single-player games, kind of like Animal Crossing, which I know it's multiplayer, but when you have no one to go to, like in the original, it still can be a multiplayer game, a multiplayer experience for a single-player game. And that's
like the schoolyard used to be when we were little.
Absolutely, but now it's kind of online, it's a little digital.
Online and, schoolyard. Digital schoolyard, that's what they should call this.
And I've mentioned this again too, so I apologize if I'm talking too much about old stuff, but Pogue, he was on the fence about getting a 3DS at the time. But this is right when Mario 3D Land came out, and I urged him, I said, hey, you know, do what you want. Of course, whatever's going to be fiscally smart for you. But, you know, right now, if everyone is talking about Mario and everyone's, you know, discussing levels and the boards are on fire with it, if you want to get into that community, you have to do it now. And he did, and he loved it. And now, if you bought Mario today, you wouldn't have that same kind of banter. You know, the community aspect would have kind of fizzled out, as what happens when games get older. But it's an amazing thing to see people come together like that. And
yeah, and actually, you know, just talking to you guys, it makes you want to play the recent games. Like, if it wasn't for the discussion around them, then I would just wait forever until they went on sale, like for $2 or something. But
right. When
people around you are discussing it, it makes you kind of excited about it. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, I just think, you know, community is really important these days, and Nintendo's kind of starting to realize that with their online structure, but that's one thing, and that's why, you know, I appreciate Stash so much, is that he really tries to do these kind of things for older games, but just in general. And then Gee's also got the Retro Game Club.
And with the Nintendo stuff, they don't really have those kind of features built into their consoles, so you almost have to do kind of a DIY way of making your own kind of community, because otherwise nobody's going to know what game, you know, other people are playing for the most part and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. So it's good that we have somewhere to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So
it's getting better, though.
Hey, yeah. I'm back. Hey, it's I remember that guy.
Even though he's
it's
gone.
IGN's Greg Miller.
Greg Way.
Oh, God. God, you sound just like him, dude.
I never expected a Craig Way on this damn podcast. Holy crap! Oh my God. Okay, but I'm not gonna cut that out either. now we just need a Boson sound like. To really
you
blow
could
off the speakers.
You just get the bad German.
Yeah. You could just talk like these people. Just bored.
The stupid kids, they just play the Mario and the Zelda.
All right, who can do a pear impression, and then a Matt, and then we are all set.
yeah, I'm just going to rub some baby oil all over myself. Actually, you know, like, I started a league.
You're not missing my stash.
For all those, there were so many online DS games, and it was kind of sad because of the infrastructure, nobody really played them. Stuff like Phantom Hourglass and Custom Robo Arena. And really
Fire Emblem even had it, too.
Yeah, how many people ever played that, you know?
And not they online, had it. I didn't.
Yeah, and like, but, you know, I always thought it would be so fun to actually play those because they were fun games. And so I created a league on the DS board on IGN, and it was like every day was two different kind of obscure games that nobody played. Like one day was like co-op Castlevania or something, another day was like Custom Robo and something else. And I tried to keep it going for like 2 weeks, but it was too much work, so I quit forever. And that's the end of the story.
I see. Well, Rob, continue talking about the different things that you've been putting together. And
okay,
I know there's a lot there, and I don't want us to miss out on that.
Yeah, so we had the Monster Hunter stuff. I know Ludus had played a little while.
Yeah, I haven't played that game in so long.
Yeah. And then we had the Mario Kart League. The Wii League, Spring League is coming back soon, so come join us. And the 7 should be going soon-ish, maybe.
Well, oh, really? I don't plan on heading that up really anymore. I don't really have the time to focus to that. But because what worked with the Mario Kart Wii community was that you, who was, you know, kind of doing the scorekeeping and everything, you were able to play every single week.
Yeah, and Plute helped out a lot with that too, like a lot.
Yeah.
Mario Kart 7 actually keeps track of the scores, right? If you do it within one community, if that works.
Sort of, cool. Yeah. If we did that, we could do another community just for that.
Right.
Because it would be skewed
that'd
otherwise.
It'd be pretty easy to do. No one's bad.
But
yeah, everyone just have to jump on at a certain time.
But the problem too is that you'd have people who perhaps, you know, would just play whenever they felt like it, because the community, you can't turn it on and off. So yeah, someone could just come on a Tuesday night when you're supposed to be playing Fridays, and then, you know, two people race against each other. Oh, I got first, you got first, I got first. Look at us.
Yeah.
So you would want to keep your scores tracked elsewhere.
Right.
But I mean, we should do that. It's, you know, it's so hot right now, you know?
It is. But, it's hot.
Hot and steamy. And what you guys were talking about before, too, I didn't want to misrepresent anything. If you have the ability to still play, like, couch co-op games with a close friend or a brother or sister or something like that, like, don't give that up. This is no substitute for that. And that's actually, I know you guys were laughing at me earlier with my old college game, my old football game. You know, that's how I had the most fun before, playing, you know, franchise mode on Madden with, like, you know, 8 different people or something like that. I'm going to be doing the same thing with this again, you know, years later. I play in a Wii League right now through Madden, which is cool, but it's not the same.
Yeah, know? It's never the same. I mean, but nobody can ever, few people can replicate that kind of, like, rumpus room kind of situation when they get older, you know?
Yeah.
Which I guess is why I appreciate Nintendo for not, you know, emphasizing online and everything they do, but I, you know, yeah, as I get older, I just have less and less time to sit down on the hot seat with someone and you know, play a co-op game or whatever. Just, times when my wife wants to, but that's about it, really.
What I never understood was, why do we have to pick and choose? Is it that hard to just have both? Because, you know, okay, if I'm playing Wii, like, okay, I play Wii Sports Resort with friends, and that's really fun, but sometimes they're not there, so it'd be cool if I could play some of the games. I don't know if there'd be a lag that would prevent it from working online, but
I don't think so.
Have both. How hard is that? You're just, yeah, are you not just translating the data to a wireless signal, pretty much?
That's the ideal, and I hope that the Wii U, whatever package of minigames and whatever it launches with, like the things that they showed, the demos that they showed, I hope it has some sort of online support built in right away. But Nintendo, I mean, there's like a 1% chance they'll do that at launch, but it would be nice.
I just don't understand why Nintendo doesn't listen to any podcast by any fool or read any news articles or editorials on any of the, like Nintendo World Report or like one of the great sites, you know? And listen to them, for Pete's sake, because they have good ideas. Like, fire everyone in your company. Just listen to Negative World and Nintendo World Report, and you're fine. You're gonna do great.
Yeah. Yeah. We can be the consultants at $200 an hour.
But it's just ridiculous, because I don't like Mario Kart 7 is a little nerfed because they take away features from the Wii version that were really nice community wise. And they added new ones, but why do we have to keep...
Oh, you mean like sending time trials to each other and stuff like that?
Yeah.
That's a weird thing about Nintendo is that, like, Call of Duty or something, it's like if they have a multiplayer mode, they'll just kind of polish it up every time and make it a little bit better every time, and then people keep playing it. Nintendo just like throws out their previous multiplayer mode. Like battle mode is radically different every time, to the point, I mean, it's like, why don't you just, if you have like a battle mode that works like Mario Kart 64, why not just take that online? I mean, Mario Kart Wii battle mode was like terrible. You know?
Yeah.
Why would they change it in that way?
In our social network world these days, whether you're online or not, people are generally trying to be more connected. And gaming is definitely a social... It's always been a social thing. I mean, I don't know what the first multiplayer game was. Well, Pong, right? I mean, that was
Space
multiplayer.
War.
Yeah. Combat, you know.
Yeah.
Combat was awesome.
Yes.
I think that... I do think that Nintendo has to work on that, because... It is the future. It's been the future, as like XBLA has shown and stuff. Hopefully they can do it for the low, low price of free, which would be nice.
Well, what's kind of funny is that Iwata just came out and said, like, we're not going to do online the same way as everyone else. We're going to do something interesting, but like, how many people want that? It's like people just want them to copy pretty much Xbox Live or something like that, right?
Yeah, like, but I don't know. I do feel that they could do something different and very successful.
But do you really want them to like... you know, start building the online wheel? Like, shouldn't they just use something that already works? And that,
well, totally, they should do XBLA in their own way, but they should just take XBLA and improve on it. That still can be innovative to a point, but also it can also smoke their competitors.
I think Nintendo doesn't like doing that. Like, it's like a thing of pride or something. Like, they would hate making a clone game, you know.
Oh, absolutely. The honor thing with them is just it's very apparent.
Yeah, in a way I can respect that when it comes to games and stuff. But for like services, like an online service, I think they should probably just use the industry standard, you know?
Anything else you want to add, Rob?
Yeah.
how much more? Do we need to have a side podcast for this?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. Okami Club should be finishing up soon. I'd love to do something like that again in the future, because it's really cool to talk to people who are playing through at the same place as you are. And you're like, hey, what do you think is going to happen? And you can't do that with somebody who's played ahead of you. And you can't play it with somebody who's already beat the game. And you can't play with somebody who hasn't got there yet, you know?
Mm.
So if you're right next to somebody, you're like, hey, man, what do you think she's up to? Or what do you think's going to happen with this? Or when do you think this will happen? That was really, really fun while it was going, you know? But things kind of fizzled out there. I'd like to do an ogre battle. I know nobody else does.
Hey, I've got that on my backlog, actually. I might do that.
I have it because Rob gave it to 64? Me for Christmas.
Yeah, everybody has it, but nobody plays it.
My affection for the Ogre Battle series stems from the fact that it uses Queen titles for all of its, like...
Yeah.
All of its names.
That's true.
I love Queen.
One of these times, we're going to get it right with one of these clubs. I know the Retro Game Club ActRaiser is probably next up.
Oh, really?
I've heard a lot of buzz about that, yeah.
I like the ones that are about games I already played, so I can talk about them without playing them, which I have for ActRaiser. So, I'm looking forward to that.
We know your secret now.
God, we started so long ago. I think my topic is going to be something about storytelling.
Yeah, that was it.
Yep. And so I just want to talk about, like, if you guys care about the story in games, like, if you think games should really attempt to tell stories, or if you think it's kind of counter to the point of games, and which games do you think have done it best so far? And, like, you know, which methods of storytelling do you feel have worked best so far?
Are you asking us right now?
No. I'm going to talk for, like, 30 minutes now.
Oh.
No, yeah, you can answer if you want to. Then I'll answer afterward. Like, which games do you guys think, you know, did the best job of storytelling, and do you care about story in a game?
Returning to Okami, recently, one night I was, like, blown away by something that happened, and I just thought it was so cool. I never, like, felt that way, like, while playing a game. Like, it was just...
Really?
I was, like, blindsided, yeah, and you never saw it.
Probably didn't.
You didn't play up that far. I didn't see anything coming, though, that came, and it was really cool, I'm like, the way they did that. I know Ludus' topic is RPGs, and those are like 80% story.
Most of them, yeah.
Sometimes, you know, like negatively so.
But RPG is my favorite genre, so I'm excited for that topic. And yeah, I guess storytelling is important. I don't think it's as important in games that their primary function is in the story. Yeah, like action game, I don't think you really need a story there. Like Contra, I don't think you need, you know, cutscenes every stage like, oh, what's Red Falcon up to now? What? Oh, we can't climb that waterfall. Or something like that.
In the successive Contras, don't they just like go into prison and get out of prison like every Contra or something?
Do they? I don't know.
I don't know if to bust the old guys out
of
prison.
I think that's how Rebirth started. It was like they broke out of some random capsule and it was like, go!
I think that's how they all start.
I hated Rebirth so much.
It's really? How come? I was going to buy
I just didn't like it. I don't know.
Yeah, it was okay. It wasn't. It didn't feel like classic Contra, but it was still good. It was still a good game, but in terms of the Contra game, it was just okay.
I thought Castlevania Rebirth was really good.
I haven't tried that yet. I mean, get it. But
I think that the your question at hand is pretty conditional. Like, it's really hard to answer. I think in some ways, because
instead of saying whether a story is important, just how about if you just say which games you think told a story the best or in the best way?
Pac-Man. Ooh.
you actually
Super Mario Brothers.
you're probably joking, but the cutscenes in Ms. Pac-Man were one of the first examples of storytelling, and they're awesome, and the music is so good.
I've never even seen those. Yeah.
Anyway,
I'll tell you a good one was the original NES Ninja Gaiden was.
Oh yeah, Ninja
it was
Gaiden was a
fantastic
great
example of storytelling and a blend of good action with it, and it was. I mean, it was like heavy cutscenes for NES days, and it still does a pretty good job of telling the story.
But it was kind of minimalist too. At the same time, there wasn't a lot going on. It was just kind of dialogue and some, but like very dramatic stuff.
Yeah,
to get you going.
It wasn't the actual dialogue itself. It was the way it was told in a kind of a cinematic way, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well,
that was groundbreaking for the day.
You had the panoramic, kind of black bars on the top and bottom. You know, it was very cinematic.
Yeah. People say Donkey Kong is even one of the others. Go ahead. What were you saying?
I said maybe I'm wrong about the action game. Not needing that then. I guess maybe some action games don't need it, but you're right. I forgot all about Ninja Gaiden.
Well, modern day action.
Gaiden. I don't know, whatever.
I call it Gaiden forever, whatever. Yeah. I say Secret of Mana too, so right there.
Ninja Gaiden. Modern day action games all are pretty much based around the story, right? Though it's like the action is just kind of, you're just kind of just bashing people, but then there's some sort of story reason you're doing it, like God of War and things like that, right?
Yeah.
And in those kind of situations, I don't know, it's like usually my knee-jerk reaction is to say that I hate story in games because I like arcade games and I grew up on that stuff. Yeah. And it kind of bugs me when people are talking or like, you know, when there's like a lot of dialogue or something, I usually just skip through it. Do you guys ever listen to like voice acting or do you skip through it?
Sometimes.
I don't skip anything.
If it's good, like Metal Gear Solid, I was like, they have really good voice actors for this. But, you know, Final Fantasy X, I muted the TV several times. Ha, 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 ha. You go look that up on YouTube if you
see. Banjo-Kazooie voice acting was really spectacular.
It was.
Two enthusiastic thumbs up.
Alchemy has that also. But like, okay, Metal Gear Solid is like a perfect example of what I was saying. Like, a lot of people say it has like a great story, but would you watch that if it was a movie?
No.
Like, you wouldn't enjoy it, right?
It would be horrible. It is so
convoluted. Yeah, it's like a C-level movie script, but it's like the pinnacle of gaming storytelling. And like, I feel like that kind of just exposition and long cutscenes, that's like just the wrong way to go about it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the best ones are the ones that integrate storytelling into the game, like Super Metroid and Eco and Prince of Persia. Have you guys played Sands of Time? Have you guys played those?
No.
In Super Metroid, but
no. Oh, wait.
I think I have Prince of Persia.
Like Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, it's like the story is, the characters, you usually have another character with you, which is the princess, and the characters are talking to each other while you're platforming. So you're playing the game, and you can kind of enjoy their conversation while you're playing, and you can see the story progress instead of just seeing it in cutscenes and like that. And I thought that was awesome. And I thought, like, every game should do that, kind of.
It sounds kind of like what Kid Icarus Uprising is doing, or at least from the trailers we've seen, that kind of looks like that's what's going on. You know, they're just having banter while he's shooting the crap out of stuff.
Is that it, or are they cutscenes? I guess there is a lot of banter.
I don't know. There's probably going to be cutscenes in it, but it's probably going to be a lot of...
I think it is live-action stuff, yeah, because she's kind of notifying him of what's going on ahead. And
yeah.
It is kind of, like, timed, you know? Like, you get to a certain part of the level, and kind of like in Star Fox 64, I think. But yeah, that's definitely not just cutscene stuff.
How much would you pay?
Sorry.
Oh, why? I was going to say, you know what game has a lot of storytelling in it?
Star Fox Adventures?
No, Chris Wright's fake Kid Icarus game.
Is that Kid Icarus treatment?
Yeah, it's like five parts or something. He's gonna
read this. Sit down and read that whole thing.
I got too deep. It was taking a while though. Yeah.
You went all the way down the rabbit hole and back again.
No, I just made it about halfway in.
I'm gonna say something that may be controversial. I don't know, but I think that essentially, all games should have some story in the sense that I need to have a reason for doing what I'm doing.
You want to have context, right?
Yeah, like
I don't disagree with that at all.
Like a board game, like I love Carcassonne, and that I played that on the XBLA, but I actually own the game now, and like that's a board game that's kind of it's just an experience. There's no reason to doing anything. You're just scoring points. But I mean, in a way, that's almost like a story. But when it comes to like Mario, okay, princess is captured. All right, gotta get her. You know, like that's story, but that's enough. But you know, Radiant Historia, that would not make sense with such minimalistic storytelling. But I need to have context of some kind. I mean, I think even simple games like doesn't Clue Clue Land or Adventures of Lolo, didn't that have a story?
Princess got kidnapped.
Yeah, so
yeah.
Like,
yeah. It's always a princess that gets kidnapped.
And so I mean, like these games don't have to have meaty stuff. And sometimes, more often than not, people will complain about too much story than too little. You know, and so I think that's kind of where the problem lies as far as stories in games, but I think everything should have some sort of context to it.
Yeah.
Now, you can look to it like the BitTrip series. That doesn't have a clear story, but there is one subtly being told throughout the
like
whole thing.
An abstract
thing.
Story, right?
Yeah.
That's cool. I like that kind of thing. Like, have you played Eco, you guys?
No.
No.
Okay, well, like, Eco is like, basically, you're this horn boy, and he's mute or something, and there's this princess, there's always princess, and she doesn't speak your language. So you're leading her by the hand and trying to lead her out of this cave, and there's no dialogue except for the dialogue that you can't understand. And basically, the whole story is that you're just trying to help her, and you know, monsters are trying to attack her, and you feel like a real empathy for it because you're kind of living the story. Mm. I really like that kind of thing.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty cool.
I bought it for PS3. I need to play it. I've heard it's really good.
It is pretty good, and it's pretty short, so you can just play through it, unlike Okami, which is like a billion hours long. And another storytelling method is something like Half-Life, which is the main character doesn't say any dialogue, he's just like a total cipher, and then everybody else talks.
Like Zelda.
People are saying they want that for Zelda. They want there to be voice acting, except for Link. I guess, yeah, I mean, that's what most people say.
I didn't know okay.
I don't really want voice acting in Zelda. I mean, do you guys care about voice acting?
I don't need it.
It just takes so long.
You need to have good voice actors, because if it's bad, it's terrible.
Go ahead.
That's true. The thing about voice acting, if you have it, it can either be really bad or it can be really good. If you don't have it, your head's always going to be just how you want it.
Yeah, exactly. Like reading a book and seeing the movie.
And as I was playing Skyward Sword, and I won't say anything specific, but like I realized, you know what, this would be really cool if they had some voice acting, because it would feel very grandiose, more than it already was. And it would feel kind of like a film, but I still enjoyed it all the same, and I was still blown away by things, and I still had all the same emotions and everything that each character was going through.
And then look at the counterexample of Other M, where Nintendo actually tried to do voice acting, and just everybody was just like,
The baby.
That's not Samus, and I hate it, and all this. Don't you think, like, I've said this before, and nobody responded, but I'm going to say it again. Don't you think that game would have been fine if she just didn't talk?
Probably.
I didn't play it.
Or if all the voice acting was taken out and it was just like an impressionist kind of like remembering back, but all you saw was what was happening.
Well, for someone like me who doesn't follow the story of Metroid very well, because I play them well out of order, and I haven't played all the games, so I would have had like lost context. I think that was my first experience of Adam, for instance.
Oh, okay.
And but I think that keeping her mute, like she's been in all the games, essentially. I mean, that's changed as time's gone on, but initially she was, you know, very mute. I like the silent protagonist. I mean, it solves a lot of problems, doesn't it?
Have you played Half-Life? Do you like it in that?
I haven't played Half-Life, no.
Okay. It's just kind of weird because everyone else is talking like, hey, Gordon, what's up? Like, hey, what's going on? And you're just kind of like walking around like a serial killer or something like that.
Well, and in a way, I can find that bothersome with, like, Zelda now. Like, the fact that Link doesn't respond to them. But at the same time, I mean, I'm thinking his very responses anyway. So it doesn't feel disconnected like it does when you do hear other people talk, but not him. Because it's almost, I don't know, it's almost like, okay, it feels like telepathy if you're just reading it. But if you hear someone say, you know, Gordon, you know, did you see that plane or whatever? I don't know the games. I just know there's a cool gravity gun. It was a big deal back in the day. But yeah, I mean, if you hear them directly address them, and then they don't say something, that can be kind of jarring as well. And it's like, can I mean, catch your tongue?
Ocarina of Zelda games, like newer Zelda games, they have a very strange style of storytelling. Ever since Ocarina of Time, it's like, it's almost cinematic, but nobody talks, so it's kind of almost like a fable, like a weird kind of fairy tale kind of feel. Don't you guys feel since Ocarina?
Right.
And they always have the music, and it's just like, you're just seeing like a play. You know, it's almost impressionistic. It's interesting the way they go with that.
But what's wonderful and what works about that is, if you want to use a cinematic analogy, silent films were all the rage before audio came into town. And they just released a new one, The Artist, I think it's called.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but there's a lot of, you know, awesome stuff to be had with a film without dialogue. You don't always, or at least audible dialogue. You can get a lot accomplished still, and I think just people throw it too much into the whole, in a way we're kind of avoiding, or dodging the topic, we're getting off topic a little bit, but I think people just throw it into the fire of, like, it's not new, it's not technology, it's not, you know, the 21st century. But
right.
Who's to say that that is, you know?
Not only that, but, like, I feel like when I play those kind of HD games on the 360 or whatever, like, it's just, it's tiresome when every game is just so much context and so much story, and they're always taking control out of your hands and stuff like that, and, you know, I just don't like when control is ever taken out of my hands. No, but there's a couple of exceptions, like, of games with cutscenes that I actually did like for whatever reason, and one of them would be No More Heroes, just because it's so crazy. Like, the cutscenes are just kind of funny. Did you guys play that?
No, I haven't.
I haven't.
God, you guys haven't played anything.
And I just got my first Nintendo yesterday.
Did you?
No.
Another one is Enslaved, which I'm not going to ask because I'm going to assume that nobody's played that. But it was written, so this is one of the rare exceptions where it is totally cutscene driven and it has all the, you know, defects that I mentioned earlier, and I don't even like the gameplay that much, but the story was actually good enough to keep me going. It was written by the 28 Days Later guy.
Yeah.
And it was really well done. Like, there's like a rapport between the main two characters, and I played that game to the end just to see what would happen, and I wasn't even really enjoying the gameplay. And that is so rare to me. So I think the ultimate problem is that I think the actual stories that the games are trying to tell for the most part are so low quality. Like, I would never watch them as a movie. I would never read it as a book. But there are just a few rare exceptions where the story is actually good enough where it can drive the game for me. But in almost every other thing, I would like to be minimized and let the game speak for itself.
Maybe the problem is then that, you know, game developers, they know the notion that I said where you kind of need context for your actions, but they don't take it seriously enough to actually make them worthwhile. So they just think, okay, you know what? What kind of archetypes can we throw in here and just lazily do it?
And so, that's going to tie into your topic, I think, because licensed games, they make up for one of the biggest weaknesses of game developers, because you already have the universe, you've established the characters, all that stuff, and that stuff is established, you can just make a game and people are already familiar, and you've already got that built up in people's minds, which is awesome. Which is why there's so much potential, really.
And yet it always ends up just being false advertising.
Almost always. Because
they do nothing with it, nothing substantial.
Because the good developers want to own their own IP.
Right. But we'll get into that, because there's examples of good licensed games which have good story and et cetera, but it's not time yet. So, like, Lewis, Rob, you guys got anything to add? I've been, like, taking over, sorry.
Now you're good.
For the story stuff?
Yeah.
I think Anand said before there was an anime adaptation for Tales of Symphonia.
Oh, yeah.
I really liked that. That was my next choice after Okami. Was really good. And I like
Tales of Symphonia?
Yeah, I like Final Fantasy 3. 6. Whatever. It was always 3 to me. Whatever. Yeah, but you said, I mean, if it's good enough to get its own anime, I mean, it's got to be good, right?
Actually, I love that option that for really big RPGs now, they just make, like, cartoon adaptations. And I'm like, why would you ever play the RPG then? I could either spend, like, 100 hours grinding through random battles, or I could just watch the actual story instead of grinding. But usually people say they don't turn out too well. I like the Valkyria Chronicles anime. That was pretty good, actually. Did you guys see that? No?
No.
I played the game.
No.
So
that looked really fun. I like the way the game looked when I was seeing
it.
I was really sharp. I was jealous that I wouldn't be able to play it.
That's the one game that I really want a PlayStation 3 for.
It was like watercolor looking, right?
Yeah, it looks really nice.
And then I got more excited when I found out that some people from Skies of Arcadia were in there?
Yeah, it's the Phantasy Star Skies of Arcadia.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I was freaking out.
You like Skies of Arcadia?
Yeah. Somebody mentioned Random Encounters earlier. That's the last game I play with Random Encounters.
I cannot take Random Encounters.
I can't do it anymore.
Really? You love RPGs.
I mean, I can go back to it. I just can't play a new game with that stuff. Like, any of the newer RPGs, like Tales of Symphonia or Arkwright's Fantasia, you can see everybody out there.
It just tends to get so overwhelming at times. Like, I mean, if I can see my enemies, but if I want to play the game, I'm just going to hit them anyway, you know? It just gives you more choice to allow you. Like I was saying with the Radiant Historia, I can now skip certain sections that I've done before that I don't need the experience from. You know, so don't make me take time. I want to get back to the plot, back to the rest of the game, etc., etc.
This is also dipping into the RPG topic, but, like, I just think it's the most frustrating thing in the world when you're trying to just walk across a room and you're just praying that you don't get stopped, and then the screen just goes, ding! And then, like, you know, you can take it to a different battle screen, and you're just like, why? I just want to walk across the room. Yeah, I think that's just an archaic thing that people put in because the limitations of the time, or because it just seems like a really cynical thing to force people to just randomly be bothered, you know?
Yeah.
Like, a video game is essentially like a series of obstacles to overcome, but that's just like a series of just random botheration annoyances that happen to you while you're trying to move around. It's like very strange to me.
So to get back on the storytelling aspect really quick, before we run out of time for this, I want to mention one game that I think, I mean, there's so many games and examples. I'm just thinking of one from my own collection that has a good story and one that doesn't. Perfect Dark, I think actually, I like the story, and I thought that really serviced the game well.
Really?
Yeah, even though, like, it's kind of convoluted, you know, the whole, you know, well, I mean, not really a spoiler, it's decades later, but, like, the whole alien subplot and everything, it's kind of ridiculous.
What?
But still, like, the levels are all well designed around the plot, you know. You have a reason to be in each level. Kind of like GoldenEye, but of course that was based off the movie. I think that game actually is a pretty good example of story. It doesn't bog you down with too many cutscenes or anything.
Yeah. Are you talking about Perfect Dark or GoldenEye?
Well, Perfect Dark, but yeah, I mean, GoldenEye is an example of a great licensed game, but
it is a nice one because we knew about those things already, and then you play them, and it's like, hey, I'm playing in my place, and it's a fun game. And
you know,
yeah,
it worked out for me that GoldenEye was already my favorite Bond movie ever before the game came out, and then the game ends up being
awesome. Incredible.
Yeah. But really quickly, an example of a horrible story, and I don't know if I'm going to get shit for this or not, but Super Mario Sunshine is an example of taking the princess formula and then just throwing more crap on it. Like, you don't need any more reason than that, but what, he has to go to jail because he was framed by a water version of him? Like,
the newer Bond movies where he's, like, been in prison for, like, 12 years or something, and it gets out.
Yeah, we just don't need Dark Mario, you know what I mean? Yeah. Which is what essentially that little dude was. I mean, and then there's even, again, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't played this game ever, but then you find out that Bowser Jr. is the is the little dude, and it's like, I'm so shocked and appalled, and wow, this story really had me on the edge of my seat and spun me around. Yeah, no, it's Mario still, for Pete's sake. It's just unnecessary.
I thought Galaxy, the little story in Galaxy was kind of enjoyable, kind of affecting in a weird way, in that same fable kind of way that Zelda is, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you know what? And then there was more story than you needed, but it was optional.
It was totally optional, right?
And again, options. I think game developers just forget to give us options in every facet of the game. You know, craft it how you like, but provide people the options to skip. Like in Radiant Historia, since you go through things often, like you might repeat the same piece of history and the same amount of text, but you can instantly skip it. You can either fast forward or you can skip it. And you can do that from the beginning, too, even if you haven't seen it before, which is wonderful. It means in future playthroughs, you actually might want to play the game again because you don't have to go through the whole thing again.
In Skyward Sword, you can't speed through text, right?
No, not at all.
Sorry.
Especially not when you collect bugs. But,
oh, there's bugs?
No, but it has... yeah, there's tons of bugs. But it has a lot less of a kind of like...
That's for
you got a rupee.
Topic.
That's worth 1 rupee.
Yeah, no. No, actually, I think the bug thing is fun. It's not... It's not that big of a deal, so don't worry about it. But the thing is that every time you boot up your game, the first item that you collect or the first bug that you catch, it forces you to read about it again.
Right.
And you can't speed through it. And it's only a few seconds, but it adds up over time to be minutes and hours of just that, which is probably me going overboard.
It's probably still not as bad as the rupees, though.
Right.
But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we've kind of gone all over the place, but I just want to mention one recent trend in a lot of the big games that are coming out now, stuff like Uncharted and the Darkness 2 demo that I just played. Mm-hmm. And it's the trend of taking control away from the character. Like I said, like there's cutscenes, and then there's segments where, like in Gears of War, you're talking on the phone and you're just walking really slowly. Or in the Darkness, like there's one place where you're just being dragged by somebody and you just have to be dragged. And, you know, it's like you don't have, in Uncharted, you're kind of stumbling because, you know, you've just come out of a car crash. And it just forces you to, like, just play slowly and just for the point of the story. And I really don't like that. I just feel like control should always be in the hands of the player. And the model for a dialogue heavy game should be Prince of Persia Sands of Time, which not that many games copied. But I feel like just everything should have that came after it, or Eco, you know.
That kind of transitions from, you know, the storytelling aspect, and we're talking about, oh, I hate random encounters and stuff like that. So what about RPGs do you guys like? If you had the opportunity to go to Square Enix or to Nintendo or to whoever and just say, hey, this is what I would do with my RPG, what would you do?
Cleavage.
Mario RPG. I think Mario RPGs are pretty brilliant because they like fix almost everything that's bad about the RPG. In my mind, and they're the only RPGs that I can play and have played, pretty much.
They, as a Nintendo focused gamer, yeah. I mean, I've mainly played those games, but I don't know. I can't disagree with you.
I mean, it fixes a lot of stuff. You've got the problem of random encounters is gone, right? Since the beginning.
Yep.
The turn based battles are not boring because instead of just picking something from a menu, you're actually doing
the action button.
Exactly. You've got the action gestures that makes you involved in the battles.
Yeah. And if you're good, it makes you feel satisfied because you're actually.
It's extra rewarding to do, even though the whole game is pretty easy for the most part, usually. But yeah, it's rewarding to do well. You've got the, it's not too, like, bloated and you don't have to keep track of too many stats and things like that. Just like your genes points or whatever.
Right.
And then also,
that's true.
Yeah,
your shirt power.
Yeah, your overalls. Which overalls you're wearing? And
are you
then
kicking a shell or a hammer, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, the other thing is the story. It's not like it never gets overblown because it's always funny. It's always charming. It's always amusing. And I love those games because they're like pretty much the perfect RPGs for me. And there's been a lot of recent RPGs that are made kind of from that mold. But I feel like why would anyone ever go back to anything else in a way?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think to a point, I guess, because I've been playing RPGs since Dragon Warrior 1 on NES.
Yeah, did you get it for free?
Yeah, I did.
I actually paid for it.
I think that's just about how everybody got it. I was going to say everybody, then you just threw up the curb there. Thanks, bro. no, but like to me, it's like they're almost too easy. But at the same time, one of my favorite games ever is Superstar Saga on Game Boy Advance, which was fantastic for a lot of reasons. I thought the dialogue was great. I thought the combat was great. I thought the balance was great. It was short, but not too short. You know, that to me was almost the perfect game.
It was great, but it was kind of like there was one point where I stopped playing for like a week and I was just hopelessly lost. I could never find my way out of this like dungeon. But it is a good game regardless.
Yeah, I love that game. I'd say do away with random encounters. I don't know. I had this brilliant idea one day back when I was like, I'm going to make video games and make the best one ever, was to make it so that, kind of like Monster Hunter, where it's like, you know, oh, I killed something. Here, let me go skin it and get some resources and then take them into town and sell them. But I'm like, that seems kind of convoluted. But it just doesn't make sense to me that monsters would drop like a pile of gold after a battle. It's like you killed an imp. You got $3,000. What?
Maybe
I think
like
Earthbound actually did it pretty well when it's like you never got the money, but your dad was just like, oh, by the way, I put some money in your account and you pulled it out of the ATM.
You want to like disembowel a monster and then like take the monster shit to town and burn it for
That's kind of what I wanted to do, but like the more I think about it, the more I'm like, it's just kind of adding a weird step to the process. And yeah, Earthbound, I think, got it right. So, do what?
Ever played Red Dead Redemption?
No, I haven't.
You can just skin, like, just any animals you see and just, like, sell their skins and stuff like really? That. It's kind of boring, though. But go ahead.
Radiant Historia does that kind of convoluted thing, too. Like, I've killed so many giant bears and gotten so much money out of it.
Well, are you guys talking about only Japanese RPGs or also Western ones? Because Western ones are a little more realistic.
Like, hey, whatever you want, man.
I don't really know the difference.
But I don't have a lot of experience with Western RPGs.
Yeah. Neither do I, really.
Yeah.
Well, one thing,
none of us do.
One thing I wanted to say about the Mario RPGs that I love is, like I was saying before, one of my favorite things about RPGs is, you know, leveling up. Not necessarily like levels themselves, but just being able to soup up your character and optimize. And the Mario RPGs definitely do that. You can get all these new weapons, and you can pick and choose. And I like the whole was it stickers or was it stamps or something or
yeah, something.
Badges.
Badges.
Yeah. Badges. Yeah. Badges.
That was really cool, and I love. It's so gratifying to like go in this little nook in this dungeon that I didn't even know existed, and then find a really cool badge. And but one thing about the RPG genre as a whole that I think is different than a lot of other games, especially like different than first-person shooters, different than platformers, different than puzzle games, of course, is that RPGs tend to focus on, at least my favorite ones, tend to focus on the group. You know, obviously, I mean, I can't even name an RPG that doesn't have more than one playable character, but Pokemon even does this, even with the one main human character. You've got your team, and in Radiant Historia, you've got Stock, but then you've got Rain, Marco, Rosh.
That actually always bugged me. Like, I always liked when RPGs used to be like the first Dragon Warrior was just one guy, and you just have to worry about one guy.
I don't think there are very many other than that, now that I think about it.
There really aren't. And like the Tales of Symphonia games, it's like an action system, and you've got these other three guys running around. It's like, I can't keep track of those guys.
Stardust is the same way. It drives me crazy.
Well, I can understand that, too, but I think that it's RPGs then, because of that element, allow the stories to focus around that community rising up to defeat the evil. Instead of like one guy, it's kind of like, I mean, some movies you enjoy that, like Ocean's 11, which is in my head today. That's a fun movie because you get to see how these 11 guys all kind of work together to pull off the heist. If it was just one guy, it might be entertaining, but because you have the different people clashing and
in terms of story,
in terms of story, it's better. I agree. You have more interplay and stuff like that. Just in terms of gameplay, I don't know. It always kind of bugged me to have to keep track of so many people, especially in real time stuff.
Well, kind of strange. Then maybe, you know, the games for you would be like groups, but maybe groups of three instead of like groups of six or something. You know, like because some games take it too far. I mean, even Radiant Historia, it's kind of a bummer because one of the characters, you don't play with him nearly as much. He's not in your party as much, so he's way underleveled when you get towards the end of the game. And I mean, you can spend some time, and he levels up pretty quickly because at that point you're beating these high experienced people, and so it's not that big of a deal. But
and sweep it in the one where you can have like 101 characters or something like that.
Oh really? Yeah, it's absurd.
Ridiculous.
The guy you don't use in Radiant Historia, he doesn't get any experience just from existing.
Well, no, because he's not always in your party. Because
A lot of the games that I played recently, RPG wise, do. Like, even if they're not actively playing, they'll get a portion.
Okay, like, for instance, Stock goes into the city, and then Rain and Marco join him, and then later Rosh will join him. He's four, but there's only three slots. As you're battling, he's an option for you to use, so he will gain experience as everyone else does.
Okay.
But there's times when, like, okay, Stock and his crew are going to go to this city, well, he's going to go to the fortress, and he's going to do other stuff in the plot, then he's gone. Or you know, if you leave the timeline and there's a character you haven't even met yet in the other timeline, she's not going to gain experience.
Right.
So that happens when they literally leave your party. But yeah, when they're sitting there in reserve, if you can swap them out, they get experience. Not as fast, but it's not too different. They level up pretty consistently.
Did you guys play Breath of Fire 2?
Yeah. Know?
Do you remember when Bo,
I wanted to,
like, but Bo goes away?
For the longest time, yeah.
I know, and you get him way next, so later, like 10 levels later, in 15 maybe, and he can't do anything against anyone.
No.
So long.
That made me so... That part
Haven't you guys played pressure. Destiny of an Emperor?
Yeah, the game's awesome.
No, I'm just kidding. I actually know Rob has played it, but that was pretty fun. Sure. It was a Capcom RPG, like, it's like Romance of the Three Kingdoms era, and you control like Lu Bu and all those guys, and Cao or whatever.
Who are real people.
Didn't you just control armies and stuff like that too?
Your hit points are armies, I think.
That was a fun game.
No, maybe something else. That game was cool though, because you could, when you beat bosses, they joined you. Yeah, you beat other generals and then join your party of five, and then you could like switch guys in and out. And that's when you had a huge reserve of generals or whatever. So can you imagine playing like you're saying Mario RPG and you beat the first guy and then he's on your team? Like, how cool would that be?
That'd be really interesting, actually. How many games do that?
Destiny of Ember. That's about it.
It's like less than one hand worth.
You know what else does that? You ready for this one? Ogre Battle.
Okay, wow. I'm booting my Wii up right now and buying it.
Mega Man powered up. Mega Man powered up. You can play through the game as any of the boss characters.
Oh, that's cool. What else is that? Rune Factory Frontier. Wait, no, it doesn't.
That's a cool game. That's kind of an RPG.
It's got RPG elements to it, and I think the story kind of.
I think everything has RPG elements these days, right?
Yeah,
it seems to be a hip thing to do since Final Fantasy VII. Don't get me started on my dislike for that game.
Yeah. You're alone.
Do you guys think RPGs are kind of archaic, like traditional RPGs? Like, because the elements have been folded into everything, the story and the leveling and stuff like that?
I think they can get that way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's difficult to level up on some of those old ones because we're so used to doing things a certain way. Like, I'm playing Dragon Warrior. No. Yes, I'm playing Dragon Warrior 2 right now. Jargon just finished his, but. And it takes forever to like earn money for stuff and level up in that game. Like Dragon Warrior is even worse. The first Dragon Warrior.
Yeah, yeah, you had to grind a lot in that game.
The ultimate offender.
Unless you found some gold golems, I think that was it.
Yeah,
it was like 200 gold. Yes.
Oh yeah, it was like gold or those metal ones, metal slimes. Yeah. Actually, yeah, like that's the only RPG I ever beat before Paper Mario is Dragon. It was the first Dragon Warrior because back then it was really interesting because it was like a big novelty to me.
I just beat that last year for the first time.
Did you?
Yeah, it was awesome.
It's pretty simple, but it's pretty fun, and the music is good and everything. Do you guys think Zelda's an RPG? Do you think Monster Hunter's an RPG?
Yeah. Zelda blends the lines a lot. Yeah.
Isn't it mostly just an action?
Especially with Skyward Sword, the way it's got like agility and stuff. I'm like, but...
Well, okay,
except for Zelda 2, maybe?
I struggle to define Zelda. It's an adventure game, for sure, but...
Yeah.
But okay, yeah, because like okay, the Batman Arkham Asylum and stuff. I know like Pogue talks a lot about the Batman games, and those are action games, right? By definition.
Yeah, yeah.
You run around the kind of beat 'em ups.
Yeah.
Okay, because yeah, Zelda. I don't feel is like that, even though it's it is kind of a action adventure. But I feel like something about the adventure title gives it a different bit of a flavor, and then there are RPG elements in it. But I think RPG elements are kind of universal.
Yeah, in almost everything, like something like Monster Hunter. Like, I think it is kind of an RPG, and I really like that evolution of the RPG, because it's like, you get stats and stuff like that, and your stats go up when you get new equipment, but they also have physical effects. So if you get a certain armor effect, then you can see it, and you can use it in real-time action, you know? Right. It's not just like a number that's flying up from somebody.
I would say, for me, the defining characteristic of an RPG is experience points.
Right.
If there's experience points, it's an RPG. If there's not... Probably not.
Well, because like Mario, in the original Mario Brothers, when you get that mushroom, then you get that firefly, you are leveling up more or less, but you're not doing it with experience points. It feels different, you know? But I mean, in almost all games, you do get stronger because that's kind of that's the classic tale. I mean, every story on Earth is about becoming stronger to overcome the evil that you're facing, whatever that may be. So yeah, I think experience points is definitely one of the defining things. Which is what made Zelda 2 so interesting, and it's funny you brought up Zelda, because I was going to ask about that. How do you guys feel about that inclusion? Because I can't stand it.
I love Zelda 2, and that has tons of RPG elements, right? Like, it has spells, and it has experience points, and I just like it because, I think it's a great side-scrolling action game. It's tight, it controls well, it's difficult, it's challenging, but it's surmountable. I think that game is so good. I wish we had a sequel, like a Super Nintendo sequel for Kid Icarus and that.
Oh, I would hate that. Like, the thing is, though, I can totally respect Zelda 2 for being a solid game, too. I just don't know why I don't like it, but I just don't. I just can't
Did you play it back then, or did you only
I played it more recently, and yes, I'm a bit of a puss, but I had a Game Genie it because I was that bad at it. So I did beat it, but I beat it with the help of Mr. Genie.
And, it is pretty tough, actually. But,
I feel like it takes too long to level up Link, and then also, I think it's a mix of it takes too long to level him up. It is incredibly challenging. Not that I don't like a challenge, but something about that game makes it feel like I can't overcome it.
If you die in that, don't you lose experience points?
You lose the work you've done up to a point. And you start back way at the start, which I think is my third point that you... you well timely brought up, because that is the third part that I think makes me hate the game so much.
That's what Andrew was talking about yesterday, but there's only like 30 seconds to get the next dungeon because you keep opening up other paths with the tools and stuff. The only hard one is the very last dungeon.
I know. I just remember, like, I mean, before I did the Game Genie thing and actually beat the game, I remember constantly booting it up because I have the original cartridge and I've had it for decades, and I always get
pulled the save or whatever.
Yeah, actually, all my NES games do.
Don't you wonder when those are going to run out? Rob is going to commit suicide when that happens.
December 21st, 2012. Just calling it.
No, I honestly, end of the world. I hear people talk about it, and you're making me nervous. My heart rate is rising, because, yeah, that'll be a sad thing when that happens. Yeah. I mean, there's digital ways to play pretty much every one of those games, but, like, I don't see Mickey Mouse Capades on the Virtual Console, and damn it, I want that cart to stay alive then. It's not that great of a game.
But you can go pick it up for, like, $3 used. No.
Well, like, I mean, well, not to segue too much, but I mean, on those cards, is it just the battery itself? I mean, couldn't I, in theory, break the bitch open?
Yeah, there are ways to do it, but it's a pain in the ass. You wouldn't want to do it for every one of your games.
Yeah, true. No. But, well, which is what I guess is nice about the classic Mario, is that there is nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
Right. But actually, what I like about the Virtual Console is that it's sort of like a save game for the high scores and stuff, even for things that didn't have a save state. It doesn't just reset when you turn it off.
Yeah.
That always bugged me. I hate that. Why even have a high score in, like, Donkey Kong on your cartridge when it's going to reset in 5 minutes when you're done?
Because in the future, a Virtual Console is going to be invented, and then it would totally work. And you can totally start...
Yeah, because God knows Nintendo's going to add that feature later, so they might as well do it 20 years ahead.
That's what old Miyamoto said to young Miyamoto when he time traveled.
Yeah, totally. And they said, hey, have you played that game MVP 2005?
Oh, it's so good.
I just got this mental image that he upends a tea table and a black hole forms. And he goes inside it and can time travel, and he comes out from underneath a tea table like 20 years in the past.
What if he kicked a future tea table back into the past through the time machine?
Hit himself in the head, that'd be rough.
Do you know this is the sixth time tea table's been set on this podcast?
It's because of me. It's because, like, I link Miyamoto to tea tables. I don't know. I just think it's hilarious, like, in my head to imagine this man doing that.
I want a cup of tea so much right now. It's so, like, cold on this concrete floor.
Like, you know that SNL skit, it's been in my head today, that SNL skit, I threw it on the ground with Andy Samberg. It's a whole thing where it's like a song, and he just throws everything on the ground, but it's so funny how he does it. And it's kind of like a hip-hop thing or whatever. I just imagine Miyamoto being like, you know, oh, your game, it totally sucked, so I threw it on the ground, you know. But, like, him with the tea table, I don't know, it's all, in my head, it's just the whole thing.
He smiles a lot.
I'm actually kind of relieved that he won't be kind of just, like, strong-arming every single game that Nintendo puts out from now on, according to that sort of press release they put out. Like, I kind of want to see what people can do when they're out from under Miyamoto's iron thumb, you know?
How much did he have to do with Zelda 2 in the sense of adding the RPG elements?
About that, I have no idea, but Miyamoto is, like, famously quoted as hating RPGs. Was it Yamauchi or Miyamoto? One of them said they're for losers or something.
Wow. That's a dickish.
Like,
That makes me just want to go away.
Yeah, he said something like, one of them said something like, they're just for people who want to stay inside the room all the time and just waste their time. Something like that.
That's all right.
So we should look it up for it. Okay, so I was like, yeah, that sounds good. I want to do that.
I do want to do that.
I want to do it too.
I wish. So, well, that's my topic, boys.
Oh, well, I didn't say anything.
You don't like RPGs. You don't play RPGs.
I love RPGs. I was going to say, I think, you know, not everybody agrees with me. I think Tales of Symphonia is, like, the modern benchmark for RPGs. I mean, it's got everything that people... It's got the opposite of what people complain about. Like, oh, they don't like turn-based stuff? Like, that's not turn-based at all. That's live action. Your fights are live action in that game. You guys have played it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. Nobody was saying... I thought Skype broke for a second.
No.
It was just because you said live action like that. It was kind of weird.
Oh, well, no. It's like you go fight and there's a timer and stuff. That's cool. And then, you know, other RPGs, like you go town to town and you buy new stuff. Like that one, you do that, or you can upgrade your old stuff, which I haven't seen in any other game, you know, until Monster Hunter, really, where you can upgrade an old weapon by using materials to get, like, a brand new sword.
Skyward Sword.
You doing Skyward Sword?
You can upgrade your equipment, yeah.
Yeah, you can.
Those freaking jerks. Okay.
You know, actually,
but you gotta collect the bugs and stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I will then.
I was just gonna say that I wish every game was like Monster Hunter, kind of like every recent RPG. But you know, in Japan, because it's so popular, pretty much every recent RPG is kind of like Monster Hunter. Like, they're kind of modifying everything to be more Monster Hunter like, even Metal Gear Solid and stuff like that.
Is there like side quests, like guild type side quests in Tales of Symphonia? I can't remember. I think those are really cool though. Like, you know, set yourself on a mission to go find something or whatever.
Hey, Rob,
it's been a while. I don't remember.
Rob, do you have any interest in stuff like Oblivion or Skyrim or anything like that?
I'd probably play Skyrim if it were on a Nintendo console. So I asked Steven 08, formerly 08, yeah. I don't know, the other day, like, why can't Skyrim be on Wii?
Because it's got to be the resources they put into it. I mean, I know that engine is ridiculous. Really? Like, it barely runs on PS3 right now.
It's ridiculous.
Okay.
Just like that. So, I think it's the, yeah.
Maybe Skyrim U on Wii U.
Maybe. I don't know. I just don't like, I don't like the Western stuff. I don't think I would. Really, anyways. Enough. It's, I like
I'm
the more fantastical.
As I am. Yeah, JRPGs. But
yeah.
It definitely has its place.
Yep.
All right.
I guess that's it. RPGs are cool. Thumbs up. Licensed games, of course.
Yep. Absolutely. actually, I mean, they're all right. But my topic is licensed gaming, and the whole reason I was kind of thinking about that lately is because THQ, who is known for all the shitty SpongeBob games my nephew plays, and and a lot of other, you know, fantastic licensed games, they decided that they're going to stop doing that. They're going to focus on hardcore games from now on. They're going to stop doing licensed kid games. And now there is a distinction too between licensed kid games and licensed games to a point. I like, if I think back in my childhood, as Lewis had mentioned before he had to leave, DuckTales. You know, I was a kid when I played that game, but it's one of those games that stands the test of time. As an adult now, we all can enjoy that game. Aladdin for the Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo. That's a very quality licensed game, as was The Lion King.
The Sega Genesis version was supposedly very slight amount better. That used to be a big ammunition in the fanboy wars, console wars back then.
You know
then.
What? I remember that too. I was a Sega kid growing up.
Were you really?
Yeah. I don't know why. I think maybe my neighbor had a Master System, and then my parents were like, oh, he's talking about Sega, let's get him that. But I didn't get a Super Nintendo until after I had an N64.
Oh, that's
pretty
interesting.
Yeah, I mean, just a random fact. And I've actually played most of my Super Nintendo games via the Virtual Console because I only have 4 Super Nintendo games: Mario Kart, Mario World, Zelda, and then Mario Paint.
I only had like 4 too because we were poor then. Like during the NES era, I used to get like a game every week, and then during the Super NES era, like I had like 4 games total forever, and I got them on sale.
But yeah, so for my Sega, actually a lot of the games that I have on there, if I think about it, I mean, I'm not going to go look at my collection right now, but I have the Beavis and Butthead game, I have the Ren and Stimpy game, the Aladdin game, the Lion King game, what else? This wasn't licensed, but I have Awesome Possum Kicks Dr. Machino's Butt.
That sounds pretty awesome.
And actually, it was kind of, it's like Sonic, but about recycling. and I got it at a trade show when I was a kid, but anyway, so those games were really good back then, and they're really, I don't feel like there was as much shovelware back in the day, but now it's so sickly easy for companies to just create this pile of crap. And I just don't understand why that, I mean, I understand why it is to a point. It's because it makes money, because like we were saying before, people will see that SpongeBob character, and they won't care about the quality of the game. They just want to buy it for their kids or something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yeah.
But it's just kind of a shame, because you know what? I don't even care much about SpongeBob. I mean, I think he's all right, but I'm not one of those adults who is addicted to him, right? But I might be interested in playing a SpongeBob game if it was good. You know.
I mean, that's the thing is that, like, back in the old days, like, I guess they weren't made specifically for kids. They were just made kind of for everybody. Or maybe we just were kids at the time, so it just seems different in current context. But, you know, like, what you said is true. Like, if you go to Toys R Us, like, during a busy shopping day, or something, well, the games the kids ask for are just the worst games. It's all about the license. And so I guess kids, they only care about the license, and so companies feel like they don't really have to make a good game, like it won't make that much of a difference.
Right, like, my nephew is addicted to monster trucks, you know, which, I mean, he's a four-year-old boy. Of course, that's going to be something that interests him. And he's been playing this one game for a while. I forget which one specifically it is. It doesn't control very well at all. You use the Wiimote to steer, and it's motion-controlled. And he gets it, but he just drives into shit. I mean,
yeah,
that's all he does. And he loves it. And, you know, he's not even caring about the points or anything. But for Christmas, I was trying to think of what else to get him, and I saw there was another Monster Truck one. And I knew that, like, the quality of the game was actually not very good. But I know that he would be okay with it. But it
so
bums
you
me
don't,
out.
You don't try to lead him away from that kind of stuff?
Well, not with Monster Trucks. But when it came to, like, looking at SpongeBob games, I did some review reading and some I watched some YouTube videos, and I was like, no. instead, we got his father's Super Mario Brothers, new Super Mario Brothers Wii, and they play that together, and he's loving it. And actually, he comes over my house sometimes, and he plays Mario Kart Wii with me, and he drives like crap, but, I mean, he's a kid, you know, but he still loves it, and he actually is really into Donkey Kong Country Returns.
How old is he?
He's 4.
Because, yeah, my nephew's around the same age, and it's like, he could play Mario Kart Wii. I think, wouldn't it be better if it had, like, an automatic acceleration option so they could just turn the wheel?
Right, yeah.
Because that's, like, a big problem, right?
Yeah, well, let's see. I'm trying to think of what his issue is with that game. I think part of it is his steering a little bit, because some of the tracks...
They turn too hard, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he knows to choose automatic, which is kind of funny. He knows that feels better to him. But well, I think he just doesn't focus on actually trying to win, you know. So like he'll get lapped, I'll lap him, and that kind of thing, or I'll like wait at the finish line just so he continues to play.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the other thing is that back in the old days, like the best developers were making licensed games, right?
And yeah, I was like, gonna say that too. I didn't want to torpedo anything, but when you think of licensed games, you automatically think of like DuckTales. Rescue
Capcom,
Rangers, Darkwing.
Like,
it was
Konami.
All Capcom. Capcom and, was all of those games.
Yeah.
And Capcom, Konami, and then LGN made like the shitty Game Boy.
Yeah, they make the horror ones like Friday the 13th, Jaws, Back to the Future games.
Acclaim and LGN made the worst. But anything that has a Capcom, like even when I was a kid, when I saw a Capcom game, I was like, that's a good game. And so I would try those games and they were fun.
I was just thinking, I can't even think of a bad Capcom game from back then.
And you know what kind of people worked in those? It's like Shinji Mikami and like just all the guys that became like hot shit later on. They started on those kind of games at Capcom and like that.
Well, you know, I think it was part of the Nintendo World Report collection of podcasts, but it was one that was over the summer, and it was not a main podcast, but they had interviewed a guy who had worked on, he was pretty much like the head guy of the Lion King game, and it was so fascinating to listen to this guy talk, because he was saying how they felt so blessed to have the license, and like there was a lot of respect there. Like, I think anyone who gets the SpongeBob license now is just like, yes, cash cow. But these guys were like, oh, wow, we have a big deal here. We want to make sure, we want to do it justice. And they were talking about how Disney was really hellish as far as, like, doing business with, because they constantly wanted things their way. But these guys...
They have approval on everything, yeah.
Yeah, but these guys were really trying to do things their way to make a great game. That they were lucky enough to have the original animators help draw the animation loops for the movements, which is why the Lion King game looks so smooth and fluid. And it was amazing and fascinating. It was like an hour long podcast. I mean, go seek it out.
Well, we have one modern example of that, which is Warren Spector doing the Epic Mickey game, right? Mm-hmm. That's like an example of a really respected developer actually, you know, wanting to make a game about Mickey Mouse, then making a pretty good game out of it. And it sold really well, you know? And so it doesn't happen very much these days because, like we said before, mostly developers want to own their own IP so they can make all the money and do all the merchandising and whatever.
Right.
But I think, like, their characters and their stories are so shitty that, like, it would really benefit them to use an established universe or something like that.
Especially for new developers who want to make a name for themselves.
That's like Rocksteady with Batman games, right?
Yeah, there you go.
And soon to be Ninja Turtles.
Who? Oh, yeah. Well, there's the rumor, right? It's not confirmed, is it?
Oh,
yeah, it's a rumor.
I thought all rumors were true as soon as you heard them. Is that how it works?
I guess we know why it's a bummer that it's not like that anymore, and we did establish what it used to be. So I'll throw this question out there. Do you guys have any ideas of what would be really great licenses to be given the proper treatment today, whether it's something that you enjoy or not. Like, maybe it's something that you see your nephew, you know, enjoying or something. Like,
honestly, I think almost anything would make a better story setting and character setting than the kind of the original idea they use for games. Like something like just a bunch of any kind of anime or thing like that. Like, it might have kind of a shallow story overall, but it's definitely still more developed than like a game thing. So if they can just build a game out of like Bleach or, you know, Gintama or something like that, I think it'd be much more enjoyable than, you know, just some random like God of War guy or something like that. Although God of War has an in-depth story, but I think, you know, the one that did it well was Astro Boy. Have you guys played that for the Game Boy Advance?
No.
That is an awesome game, and it's one of the companies that actually enjoys doing licensed games, and they're a good company, is Treasure. Like, are you familiar with their licensed games?
Mm-mm. I've heard of them. That's about it.
They're the team that made like Contra 3 and stuff like that, like games back in the day. And you know, they made Sin and Punishment. They made
Is that why I was here, Treasure?
Yeah. They work with Nintendo and some stuff. They made
Game on our board. Yeah.
They made Wario, the Wario 3D game on GameCube, which was not that great. But they are a really good company, and they made Ikaruga and stuff like that, Radiant Silvergun. And they've like all throughout their career, they've made like Tiny Toons games, and
Were they Buster's Bust Loose?
Yeah, I think so.
Holy moly, yes.
And like McDonald's games they've made.
McKids, yeah, McKids is really good.
Yeah, and Astro Boy they made on the Game Boy Advance, and they've also made other stuff like Hajime no Ippo, which is an anime game that they made into like a boxing kind of game. But Astro Boy for the Game Boy Advance is so good; it's like one of the best brawlers ever. And you know, like, I didn't know that much about the character before I played the game, and I wanted to know more about the character after I played the game, which is like, I guess, the best usage, because you could tell that even though the story wasn't that in depth in the game, you could tell that the universe was kind of rich and there was so much history there. And just, you know, just knowing that there's that backstory there and it kind of all fits together, it really enhances your experience, even though it's just a brawling game. And both of them enhanced the other. Like, I was more interested in the franchise, and the franchise made me more interested in the game. And I feel like if they just get good developers, like, that's really the ideal thing.
Yeah, I think you asked which license we'd like to see. I think the better question is who we'd like to see handle certain licenses. I mean, one of the biggest licenses is probably Simpsons. And have they even had a good game?
Well, the arcade brawler was in her, you know, that was fun.
Oh, yeah, that was a long time ago.
That was the arcade. I mean, that was never console.
I have the Road Rage one. Oh, yeah. Well, that was a Crazy Taxi clone, but that was actually my preferred version of that kind of genre.
And there was like the Krusty Super Funhouse, like things like
Krusty
that.
Krusty Super Funhouse was awesome.
See, I never played that. Okay.
It's
a good game.
First of all, it's really good. It was one of my favorite puzzle games back in the day. I used to rent it like every week for a dollar. And it's actually, that's a funny story, because it's actually like a Japanese game that they just totally reskinned with Krusty.
That's the best. I love when they reskin Japanese games.
It is
called
awesome.
Mario 2 or something.
You know, now that you guys mentioned it, I have two Simpsons games, and I can't believe I do. But I have, I've never been a big fan of the Simpsons either, so I'm just surprised that I got a hold of these. But I have the Simpsons Bart vs. the World or something.
Oh, yeah, on NES.
I like that one. The Space Mutants one is terrible, I think.
The spray paint and all that?
Yeah, spray paint. So.
Yeah. That's the Aliens one is the X-ray goggles.
Yes.
Bart vs. the World, he goes to different places,
sorry.
A ship and... No, I'm just clarifying. He goes to different places, like an ice cave and...
Yeah, that one's cool.
I like the
minigame. Type things you have to do.
Yeah,
there's like a slide puzzle. That's the first time I actually finished slide puzzles, and I was all excited.
You know, that was the first time that I hated slide puzzles. But I went back years later when I learned how to do them, and I can whip through them. Actually, Wind Waker is the reason that I can do slide puzzles so well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know what game has pretty devilish slide puzzles? Is Onimusha. They're like a real bitch. The slide puzzles in the middle of an action game.
Yeah. But the other Bart game, or Simpsons game that I have is, I remember this one being pretty horrible. I never got very far. It was the Game Boy one, Camp Deadly.
Oh, I think my friend had that. I think, was it like LJN or something?
What do you mean?
All LJN.
LJN.
My friend had this crappy Game Boy Spider-Man game by LJN. It was just so bad. It was like the collision detection was so shitty. I was always jealous of the Spider-Man games on Sega consoles. Like the Genesis. Did you ever have any of those?
No.
I remember the X-Men game being pretty good on Genesis.
Yeah. You played a Genesis?
My buddy had one. I used to rent it once in a while. I never owned one, though.
Well, so as far as licensed games, you know, we know that they've been pretty good in the past, and they're not really very good now. I mean, I feel very turned off when I hear that a game is licensed, which kind of goes against what you were just saying about how if we had good developers doing good games, then or good licenses, then good games will come from them, you know?
But right. I don't even feel like trying them. Wouldn't you be excited if it was a good developer, though? Like, wouldn't you be excited if it was one of your favorite developers doing a licensed game?
Well, like, I personally don't dive too into, like, who does what. I don't really pay that close attention unless it's contextual at the moment.
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah, like, I don't
either.
Like, what? Yeah, whatever. I don't know.
It's so fun. It's like the director and writer of a movie and stuff like that.
Yeah, but there's just so many to keep track of, you know?
They're just names to me. I have no idea who anybody is. I know that, like, anything Atlas touches turns to gold for me, pretty much. Except for Baroque. You guys play that game?
No, it's a roguelike, though, isn't it?
I heard it's awful. I heard it's so bad. I bought it for my buddy. Who loves RPGs. I bought it for my buddy who loves RPGs for Christmas one year. Oh, he's like, it's so horrible. I was like, oh god, I never want to play it.
It got like one star some places, but some places said it was okay. Like, but yeah, like...
Well, okay, one star is not very good.
Well, that's the other thing, is that like, THQ... That's who owns the licenses these days, is companies like THQ and EA and Plinthing, and they're just not going to make the best games for the most part, you know? Right. Like THQ, did you know that their stock, they almost got delisted from the stock market because they had, their stock had fallen so far. It was just really, really super low. But like EA, they made the Simpsons game, they make Lord of the Rings games. Mm-hmm. And some people like them, but I think they're all just workmanlike. There's nothing like, you know, that really jumps out at you. I think, but I kind of like Japanese companies better in general in the first place. So maybe I'm just biased.
What are some of your most famous to you, good and bad licensed games? Because I haven't played that many recent ones, I guess, or any like non-NES era ones. But I know that one from the NES era that I hated was the Ghostbusters game.
It was really bad.
I don't understand how
it
plays.
The Commodore 64 game is pretty good.
The version of it?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a version of the same game, but the Commodore 64 Ghostbusters game is pretty.
It probably, but I don't know. I don't know. Hopefully, it was good. So something came out of that, because it's a good franchise. It's a good thing to use for fodder. But
remember the arcade game, the real Ghostbusters arcade game?
No.
It was like a shooter, like a multiplayer shooter, top down.
Wow.
With Slimer. Yep.
Well, they had that. They had a Wii game too. Ghostbusters did.
Yeah.
I don't really like that too much.
It was multi-console. I think it was.
Oh yeah, it was on every console. Yeah, I didn't like that.
Either. It was different though on the HD consoles.
A little bit.
Although, didn't it have an original story written by those guys? Same guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't like that game that much either. It was kind of boring.
No, I played the demo.
Yeah.
That was by Redfly Studios or something like that.
Right? We went to Redfly, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know. I always liked the wrestling games. I thought the wrestling games, those are still THQ, aren't they?
Yep.
Depending on, yeah.
The ones that I liked were.
Well, the arcade ones. Do you remember the arcade ones, Rob? Like the one that was like
NBA Acclaim. Acclaim,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, those are pretty good. Like the one with Doink the Clown.
Yeah, that is shoot. What's that called?
Remember.
That's the one where like they would do funny things, like you do an eye gouge and your eyes actually come out.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Or like Undertaker would hit you with a tombstone.
Yeah.
I don't know why I cannot think of what that game is called right now.
It was really good. It was like a fighting game and wrestling.
That's frustrating.
The other thing is that arcade games. There were a ton of good arcade games that were licensed because everyone almost forgot about. Like, there's Superman games and just...
I was just thinking of Alien vs. Predator. Like, how... Or the Predator game, how cool that was.
Which one?
I think it was called Alien vs. Predator. Remember, you could play as a warrior Predator or, like, a hunter Predator, and you also had the Arnold Schwarzenegger character.
The arcade?
Yeah. You fought aliens.
Do you remember the RoboCop game?
For Nintendo?
No, it was in the arcade.
No, I have the NES ones though in there.
That's the whole thing, is that the arcade games are almost always like simple brawlers or shooters, but they're still fun because they're quality games made by like quality companies, like the Punisher game and stuff like that, or the Avengers.
How many things did LGN have? Because I'm just trying to think back. Everything licensed was LGN or Capcom. Because they had the wrestling license then too.
Except for Konami had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right?
Yeah.
And Konami had Simpsons too for a while.
Did they?
Yep. They made the arcade game. And X-Men. They made the X-Men arcade game.
That arcade game is so good. The dual screen one?
Oh, the one that you can play with like six people?
So awesome.
Actually, it came out on Xbox Live. And it was like $2 one day. And then I played the demo. I was like, this used to be really fun. But I don't think I'd ever play it.
Well, one game I like a lot that a lot of people don't seem to do backflips over is the Ultimate Alliance game. If they gave me that every year or every few years, I'd eat it up every single time.
I think a lot of people think it's like a step down from the previous.
Really?
Those are pretty decent license adaptations. And like also, if you guys play the Wolverine game.
No.
The recent Wolverine game is a great, great use of license. It's like, it was, came out around the same time as the shitty movie, like the solo movie he had. But it's so much better than the movie. Like, it uses a license so much better. It's truer to the character. And it's basically just like a beat 'em up, but in that, like, the license totally enhances it, and it's enhanced by the license, and that's a great example of a license game.
Pretty much we're out of time, so I just want to hear from you guys, if you can even pick one right now, but what your favorite license game would be that's been out in all the years.
I'm going to have to go back to that Astro Boy on Game Boy Advance. That was a great game, great license, made me more interested in both. And okay. Wolverine and Batman are good recent examples of that. How about you, Steven?
I'm so afraid to commit. Let me think.
Mine, which we mentioned, and I can't believe I forgot for a split second, but yeah, that Buster Bust Loose, that Tiny
Toons
game. I love that game, yeah.
I never played it.
Oh, man, it was so fun. It was kind of like, I mean, it was kind of like Sonic and Mario together. Because Buster, if you get him up to speed, he does run really fast. He doesn't control like Sonic very much, but it was just a platformer, and you would jump on enemies, and you would scale random places and stuff like that. It had very varied levels. Like, there was a forest that I remember loving so much, and a field area. So it was kind of like a blend of Mario and Sonic, but with the Tiny Toons license. And I remember loving that cartoon as a kid.
Speaking of Sonic ripoffs, licensed Sonic ripoffs, Roadrunner Death Valley Rally was really fun on the SNES. I liked it better than Sonic.
I've heard that, yeah, before. I've never played it.
Actually, it's pretty good.
I heard there was like a PlayStation Roadrunner game, I think it was, that was actually pretty good too.
Really? I never heard of that one.
Maybe it wasn't even PlayStation, maybe it was the Super Nintendo one, but I just remember like over a decade ago someone mentioning it.
Oh, I just remember something else. Like, some people like the Spider-Man games, the 3D ones. I think the swinging is pretty fun in some of them, although the combat is never quite right and they always have some pretty big errors. But the Game Boy Advance, the last two Spider-Man games on the Game Boy Advance, like Web of Shadows and something else by Griptonite Games, are actually really awesome. They zoom the camera way out, so you can actually play really fast and speedily and swing around, and the combat is good because it's 2D, and those are great licensed games. Really good. Web of Shadows and I forget what the other one's called.
Mm-hmm.
Shattered Dimension. Rob, have you decided yet? TikTok?
Like sports included?
No, no sports.
I mean, sports. I mean, every sports game is licensed. Yeah.
Only if it's a sports. Only if it's like a Bugs Bunny sport game.
Bugs Bunny sports.
Yeah.
Well, sports, if you're counting sports, I'd go Tecmo Super Bowl 3.
Okay.
We're not counting sports.
Probably Ninja Turtles 2 arcade game.
Oh yeah.
Really?
NES. Yeah, it's awesome. Are you kidding? I mean, really, that game's awesome.
You don't like it better than the arcade?
Is the arcade? It's the same game.
I guess. I don't know why everyone's so fond of those beat 'em ups.
That's the arcade game.
I know they're pretty fun, but I kind of like the action.
It's called the arcade game in the title.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm tired.
I think it was I mean, especially if we're talking about good uses of the license. Like, one thing about Buster's Bust Loose is that it really utilized the Tiny Toons collection very well. You know, and the Turtles game definitely did the same thing. You fought familiar bosses, you fought in kind of familiar settings, and it was, if you were a turtle at the time, that's what you would expect to be doing, is fighting the Foot Clan, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, it was always so weird how, like, Donatello was always the only character everyone wanted just because his reach was so much longer.
Yeah.
Everyone else was, like, useless, even if they're mildly faster.
Well, I think we may have uncovered something here today with your topic. I think we usually go back to what the good licenses are, but it's probably the company, like we said,
is
more important. Because, I mean, think of how many games you should like that you don't, and how many games you shouldn't like but you do. I mean, even Little Mermaid for NES isn't that bad a game. It's not, I mean, I'm not going to do backflips over it or wait in line to get it, but it's not horrible, and I'd rather play it than a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm.
Little Nemo is pretty good, too. Like, Capcom, Konami, and Nintendo back in those days were just pretty much like...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a Triforce of awesome.
I just looked it up, and yeah, Buster's Bust Loose was Konami. Yeah,
and it was...
I'm not surprised.
It's treasure, right?
Think of a bad Capcom game from NES.
From NES?
Capcom.
A lot of people don't like Street Fighter 2010, but I do, and I think it's awesome. And a lot of people don't like Strider. A lot of people don't like Strider NES, but Strider NES is awesome too.
You know who loves Strider? Did you remember Wei playing it at what's that place called? In New York.
Oh.
He's going crazy over Strider.
Barcade,
yeah.
Strider's awesome. That's like one of my favorite arcades.
Oh, is that like a bar / arcade kind of thing?
Yeah. It's in Brooklyn.
When I was
we played Punch Out there. We played Punch Out.
We're in Brooklyn. Shoot. I was there for 10 days in October. I didn't even know I was so close.
You can look it up. There's a good leather shop near there, too. Yeah, it's
see, cool. I was there. I just wasn't at the barcade.
Okay.
As a kid, I would go to a place called Major Magic's, and which was kind of like a Chuck E. Cheese before Chuck E. Cheese existed.
Yeah.
And, there was a Turtles, like, pachinko machine that I loved, Ninja Turtles. But
pachinko,
there was
really?
Yeah. It was ridiculous, but it was awesome. And then the actual video game I loved the most was the Popeye one. I remember that fondly. Yep. Well, we're just about out of time. We'd really like you to comment on what you've heard via negativeworld.org. You just simply find the thread associated to this episode. And if you don't want to subscribe to Negative World, you can reach us through the Facebook page. So simply search for negativeworld.org. Or you can reach us at Twitter, which is @negative_world. Now, around the boards, we've got a lot of great things going on, as per usual. Infinity Wave is on his 102nd consecutive week of designing badass t-shirts, so check out that thread. And occasionally, they're actually available for sale when they're voted on. It's a whole cool thing. He's a creative genius.
One.
Do you?
Yeah,
which one?
Good. It's the one with... It's a Mario-themed one with Thor's hammer. Like, it's like a Hammer Brother finds Thor's hammer and then incinerates Mario.
Yeah. I've seen that one. It's just another example. And I can't believe he does this every week.
I know. It's pretty impressive.
It's so high quality, you know?
Yeah. He does a lot of different art styles.
Mm-hmm. He's a very versatile guy. But also on the forums, we got Anon Mastermind. He's posted a thread about all the various things that Iwata mentioned in the keynote recently. So you can check that out and see the discussion that we've got going on of what Iwata is promising these days. And lastly, as previously mentioned on this podcast, Lunker3, who is one of our newest members, he found the site through this podcast, and so now he's here trying to get a Mario Kart Wii Online League going, and I think it's like a week in, maybe 2 weeks, and he's got...
Wednesday nights, too.
Wednesday nights?
Yeah, Wednesday nights at 9, I believe.
Wednesday nights at 9, and he's got some people in it, but, you know, you could always use more with these leagues, so... if you're interested, go check out the thread and go talk to him, and he'd be happy to have you. So get that Wii wheel and hit the pavement.
Yep.
Finally, I also, as usual, for Zero's sake, want to remind everyone to update their damn game databases.
Yep. And for Rob's sake.
I could be nicer. Yeah, and for Rob's sake, because he along with Roy Krupa, I believe.
Roy's been shouldering the load for a long time.
But they do a good job of keeping that very clean and adding box art and stuff like that. So you guys, thank you for that. And thank you, Rob, Anand, and Lewis, who is not here anymore, for doing this with me. You guys, I appreciate your time both
You're
here
welcome, Steven.
And on the boards. Oh, yeah.
And thanks for having us.
Yeah, no, it's been a hell of a time with you guys. I love it.
That was my Lewis impression. / Greg Miller impression. It's been fun. It's been a fun 4.5 or 5 hours or whatever the hell it's been.
Yeah, all I can say is I'm glad that we recorded this a little bit earlier, because now it's not the next day yet. But it's been fun. And everyone listening, thank you for listening, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.
All right, everyone have a nice dinner.
Project Cars!
Woo! Did you guys ever play the first Metal Gear Solid?
No.
Yeah.
No. Well,
two knows, one yes.
You mean the PlayStation version or the Twin Snakes on GameCube?
Well, PlayStation, but it might have been the same on GameCube. I just don't know. There's a section where Snake is being tortured, and you have to press the button super fast. Otherwise, he gets the bad ending. And I could not beat that thing for the life of me. And I tried for like 30 minutes. I was just like, fuck this. Oh, sorry. And then at the end of the game, I got the bad ending. And it was so like disheartening. And there's also a section in like Star Fox Adventures, the easiest game in the world in all other aspects, has also one of those sections, which just drove me insane because I guess I lacked the ability to do that with my old fingers or something.
Well, thank God, though, that the automatic controllers did come out. That helped a little bit. And, yeah. And like, I mean, in Mario Party, that's, you're being a cheap bastard, but like in that Metal Gear, it sounds like that would be kind of useful, you know, if you really couldn't do it.
And that'd be about the only time you need to use it, I think, in that game. I don't remember.
In that game, yeah, but people used to have those back in the NES days and stuff like that with the turbo controllers, yeah. Remember, like, the programmable controllers and stuff like that, and we're like, oh, cool, you got an NES Max.
I've got one of those advantages, yeah.
Yeah, my friend had one of those, too. Actually, have you guys ever gone back and played the NES?
Yeah.
Yeah, I pull mine out like once a year.
Not in a while, but...
Isn't that controller, it's just like, it's like all edges.
Yeah.
And it's so small.
But it's like a ninja star.
Yeah,
hurts my hand more. I don't think it's the NES controller. Something's been bothering my hand though. Like going back to play it. It might be Super Nintendo.
Yeah, because it has no grips, right? It's like weird to go back to that, and it's just.
I don't know. It's like too small. Like the classic controller on Wii is fine, but the Super Nintendo one isn't. It might be the NES one. No, one of them makes my hand hurt.
My least favorite controller thing like that is actually the Wiimote on its side because the where the
that
little
feels
clip
weird to me too.
Where the battery. The battery clip, yeah, cuts into my hand constantly. So, I mean, yeah, I can just wear the Wiimote condom and have safe gaming, and it's all good. But, I don't know. It's just, it's a bummer that's... I mean,
and you can share it without danger of getting anyone sick.
That's true. No viruses, no...
Yeah. When your blood ends up on the controller.
Gross.
Safe sex.
Yeah, I think my favorite everybody. Controller, honestly, was the N64 controller. It just felt right. Like, because when I first looked at it, yeah, when I first looked at it, I was like, this thing looks hideous. And then I actually, you know, got a Nintendo 64 in, I don't know, 95, 96, whenever it came out. And I put it in my hand. I was like, oh, this is right.
No, going back to it now, I'm not that big of a fan of it, but I think the WaveBird is just wonderful. That's my favorite controller.
How come people like the WaveBird better than the normal GameCube controller? I've always wondered about this.
I don't.
It's a little bit thicker, I think. Regular. And then it, you know, doesn't have the wires and everything. It just... Yeah, it looks nice. Although my Spice GameCube controller is really cool, too. I like that.
I could never give up the rumble. Like, I love it. Ever since Star Fox 64, I love it.
When you get a hit, you just shake yourself.
Oh, okay.
My hands at a resting position look like I'm holding a GameCube controller.
Yeah, I know.
I've been playing for the past 8 years.
I think the GameCube controller is the most comfortable thing. It's just, like, molded to your hand. It's, like, crazy.
Yeah, it's good.
That's why going back and playing, like, I hate the DualShock and all the sort of mutations of the DualShock. And the impressive thing about the N64 controller was that it was pretty comfortable, but moreover, it actually had positions, natural positions for the D-pad and the analog stick.
For everybody.
Nothing else does. Yeah. And that was pretty cool, even though nothing else ever used it. And the rarely used third position of the D-pad and the analog stick and no buttons, remember? Yeah. I don't remember
anything. I had never played that with that position.
Oh, I just want to say one more thing because I made us do this whole controller grip thing. Because when you were talking about your hoagie thing, I was thinking of, like, the Monster Hunter claw that people talk about. Like, I don't even know, like, what that is. But,
it's on PSP.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so, you remember, guys, remember Mortal Kombat? You used to, like, use your knuckles to break the wood or something?
What?
Like, the bonus game. Yeah.
No,
like, I always did my knuckles like that, but if I had to do something alternating, I would always... You know, put my index finger, my middle finger on the AND button, like that way. But then for Mario Party, like, it was pressed really fast. Like, I'd actually take my hand off the remote or the controller and just use my thumb. Like, the only thing touching the controller. So none of you guys did that? Let's play Mario Party.
If you use a crayon or a pen, I think that's the best way to alternate between two buttons.
What?
I would just use my finger and, like, rub, but it would hurt after a while, but it would to get the job done. You just got to rub the little spot, you know, and it gets the job done. That's what I'm saying, guys.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, this guy, no. He, when he goes to the bathroom, he's a funny guy, so he does funny things. When he goes to stalls, he takes his pants all the way down to his ankles and just stands there, totally butt naked. I haven't actually seen it, but I've heard stories. If funny stuff.